You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
Using that same picture.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Survivor update for week 7 of Winners at War. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and we are here to go through every detail of the episode that we saw this week. I am here this week with Kevin Martin, once again, the people, they demanded that you return.
And oh, so nice.
Here you are, Kevin, yeah. Once again, using the same picture in the thumbnail, yes.
Using the same picture, yeah, guns out. Thank you, everyone, man. I was overwhelmed by the support with the podcast. The amount of positive feedback we received was, like, so encouraging. And I think this is a time in our life where things are a little bit rocky. Yeah, there's a pandemic going on. People are scared. People are nervous. Survivor has never been more important, in my opinion. This is like, people need this. People need this once a week to sit down, get their brain off of what's happening, and just delve into some amazing reality TV content. This is big. And it's interesting because through my life, so I'm 27, I can actually compartmentalize. No, I'm going to butcher that word. I can't even say that word.
Compartmentalize.
Yes, I can compartmentalize my life based off of what episodes and seasons of Survivor were airing. So in college, that was Russell Hance. That was Survivor Samoa. And I remember Russell being big in college. And in high school, I remember Cook Islands. I remember Dreams, the car situation with Yao Man. And now in season 40, while a pandemic is going on, I will never forget this season airing during this situation. And I'm so happy you had me back, and I'm excited to talk about all of it.
Yeah, I'm certainly glad that we have, I am a little upset for the players, the winners. They're not getting to have, watch parties. Really, the finale is probably not going to be what it normally is. And that's unfortunate for such a big season. But at the same time, the fact that we have such a great thing on TV when so many other things are going to be going away. For instance, we just lost Big Brother Canada, Kevin. So having Survivor is definitely a bright spot, something that we can hold on to until the season ends here.
Yeah, Big Brother Canada. We're not here to talk about Big Brother Canada, but just a couple of quick notes on that. The season is done. They wrapped up production. The writing was on the wall for quite a while. I'm happy. I've been kind of outspoken against production. I think while this has been a tough situation, BB Can Production, I'm just going to say it, they haven't handled things well. And there's been some bad decisions, and there was concern for safety with everyone. I'm just happy everyone's home right now. And I do feel for production. You know how much time, effort, theme design, competition design, how many hours of energy are put in towards trying to produce a Big Brother season is insane. To produce a Big Brother Canada season when the world is running smoothly is very difficult. Very, 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 very difficult. Some of those producers work 16 hours a day to keep the show running, and to try to run it during a pandemic was never going to happen. So, season 8 of Big Brother Canada is done, and thank goodness we still have Survivor to keep us sane once a week.
Yeah, and certainly feel for the players as well, who, especially those that were doing well in the game, that it's very unfortunate for them.
Heartbreaking.
Luckily, we've got Survivor to talk about.
Yeah. One final note on this thing before we jump into Survivor. I do just want to extend a big old virtual hug to a lot of people in the world right now. This is in my opinion, a lifetime defining moment. We have never done this before. We have never self-isolated like this before. Our parents haven't. I was talking to my grandma. She's never done anything like this before. We have never done this before, and we're all learning on the fly. So I just want to extend the message that we're okay. Everything's going to be okay. Everyone take a deep breath. This is the time to get closer with people. I feel very close with my family now. I call my mom once a day while the situation is going on. And while there are some tough things going on in the world, some good can come from this for sure. You can definitely get closer with your family. There's opportunities. I also want to give a shout out to my friends here in Vancouver. We actually started like an emergency little charity. It's called, excuse me, I was eating some cheese and crackers and it's stuck in my throat. I'm sorry, Terry.
Excuse me. It's okay. You're getting emotional about everything.
That's right. I don't want to cry too many times. All right. By the way, I've eaten way too much food since this quarantine started. That's a danger. So I just want to give a shout out to my amazing friends in Vancouver. We actually started an emergency charity. It's called feedwhoneed.ca. Check out our website. We want to deliver groceries for the elderly population for free in Vancouver, because everyone should be staying inside right now to protect each other, yourself and each other, especially the elderly population. So check out our website, feedwhoneed.ca. We definitely want to help some people during this rough time.
It's a great thing that you're doing. I think a lot of people do need help in this time, especially who don't want to have to risk going out there if they are predisposed to being in particular danger from this this virus. So
for sure.
Yeah. Anything that we can do to help each other out in this time.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to get through this together. It's I think some good can come from this for sure. And but yeah, it's a weird time, dude. It's a weird time. You were saying before the podcast started, it's very movie-esque what's going on right now.
Yeah, it feels like a post-apocalyptic movie or something.
A little bit. Everyone just take a deep breath. Yeah. Everyone at home, just take a deep breath. No reason to stock up. No reason to hoard. Grocery stores are going to be full. We're just okay. But please just stay at home. Everyone just stay at home for weeks. And this is going to be months, too. I've had my pulse on this thing for a little bit. For some reason, the poker playing community had their pulse on this pandemic situation. So, we just need to take this seriously, but not panic.
Yeah. All right. Well, in the meantime, we do have things that can help take our mind off of things as we are isolated in our homes for quite a while. And that is what we're here to talk about, Survivor. Unfortunately, not a pleasant week of Survivor. It was a good episode, not necessarily a pleasant outcome for the episode, as we have lost Yule.
Yule's Kwan. He's gone for the first time in Yule's Survivor history career. Yule went through the entirety of Cook Islands, never got voted out, played an amazing game, and for the first time ever, his torch has been snuffed. Another legend. Look at this boot order. It's been entertaining, but there's been some pain in Survivor. Look at this boot order. I believe it's been Yule, Sandra, Parvati, Boston Rob, Tyson. Like, this is crazy. We're losing some legends in front of our eyes.
It's so rough. That's kind of inevitable when the entire cast is filled with great characters and players. But I think just the dichotomy between who's left in the game and who's gone from the game is like the worst that we could. Cause like, I think that we wanted a mixture. We wanted a mixture of old and new in the end, but now we're just like, it's all new players. And it's like, no, why can't there be at least some old players left? And so it's rough. And especially Yule, who looked like he was set up so well. Like Yule, who felt like perhaps was going to win the whole thing. Whereas some of these players, it felt like, Parvati, she's a great player, but the edit she was receiving, it was kind of like she wasn't receiving a lot of attention. So I'd already kind of resigned myself to the fact that Parvati probably wasn't going to win. But Yule, I felt like Yule had it. He had the edit. He had the position. He had everything. And then taken away.
Shocking. He was in one of my top threes in terms of win equity, in terms of winning this whole thing. He was right up there with Sophie and Jeremy for me in terms of potential to take this whole thing down. And we got to break this down. I took a lot of notes. Like, what happened? What happened? What literally happened? He was swapped into the majority. He was swapped into a 5-person tribe. He had a 3-2 majority. He had, you know, Parvati and Michelle were on the outsides. They got rid of Parvati. Where did this go? What happened between Ewell, Wendell, and Nick? Why couldn't they get their act together on the same page? It seemed like it should have been an easy vote. But in this new age of Survivor, it seems like easy votes are fewer and farther between. It seems like people get fancy. Fire tokens were maybe a part of this as well. We'll break that down. And it's shocking that Ewell's gone.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into the specifics of the Ewell vote as we run through the episode. I do want to just talk broadly about, though, about this, the fact that that all of these big old school names are now gone. It seems like this is a theme amongst all Survivor All-Star seasons that, you know, from the very first one, the big names always go first. We saw it in All-Stars. We saw it in to a lesser degree in Heroes versus Villains, but still, you know, to a decent degree in Heroes versus Villains. And then, you know, Game Changers, like every single time we see an All-Star season with really big names, we see them go down one after one. And it says to me that there's a really high level of difficulty going in with that kind of legacy, that kind of reputation. And you see people like Jeremy and Tony, even Rob and Tyson, who I think they seem to have the right idea, which is we all of the big names need to stick together. That seems to be an absolute necessity for an All-Star season. If you are a big name, you have to stick with other big names. I think the problem becomes that not all big names are big names because they were great at the game. Some of them are big names just because they have a big legacy, but not, they didn't always, like, they weren't always the most strategic players. And so it's hard to get everyone on the same page when there are some people that are like, no, I don't need this because I can go over here. And then they get tricked by these smaller names, the hyenas.
Yeah. Yeah. The lions have to work together. And this is something that I experienced on my returning season in Big Brother Canada is often too many cooks in the kitchen, too many big names that just can't gel together. If you are a big name in a returning reality TV season, you need to go to the other big names and get on the same page. You need to make mutual alliances to boost your win equity. Like, and we're seeing what, you know, we're going to talk about Jeremy later. I can't even talk about Jeremy without hearts in my eyes. I'm so into this Survivor player right now. He's my favorite of all time. I made it official. I love Jeremy so much. But you're right. The big players have self-destructed once again. And we're saying everyone here is a big player, but there is a difference between a big player and a legend, right? Like the legend here, they're all gone. They're all gone. They're all at edge of extinction. Chilling at edge of extinction while we're going to see some new legends be made. But the boot order has been quite crazy.
Yeah. So here's what we got from the episode. We started on Extinction, and we saw that Parvati has arrived. She says, nobody was willing to work with me. She tells us that getting voted out before the merge is so lame. I've never done that before.
Thank goodness she's married, or else she would be undateable now, right? John Fincher from Survivor Samoa, she's married too. Well done for John Fincher. Parvati was my Survivor crush in high school as well. I'm right with Nick, and I think a lot of people can agree to that. Yeah, we have Parvati saying, I got voted out. That is lame. But then we see Sandra come in, and this is an interesting storyline. Parvati takes a little bit of a silver lining here. Parvati says she's happy at least Sandra got voted out too. That was a little caught me off guard. I didn't know Parvati was so anti-Sandra in this game.
I mean, she did lose to Sandra in Heroes versus Villains, and many say that she shouldn't have lost to Sandra in Heroes versus Villains. So I have to imagine there's at least a little bit of like there.
Yeah, you're right. I guess, you know, if Sandra wasn't going to be a 2-time winner, it would have been Parvati. So that makes a little bit sense. But obviously, these two queens, two legends of Survivor. If I had to think of top three Survivor players of all time, both Parvati and Sandra are in my top three for sure. Sandra's won twice. Parvati's one of the top three players in the history of the show as well. So it's interesting that the queens are having trouble, you know, cheering me on right now. And interesting.
Sandra said prior to the game, and she said after the game too, that like one of the reasons she came on the season was to prevent a woman from winning so that there wouldn't be another queen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sandra's goal going into the season was like option A, I want to win for a third time. Mm. That was obviously the best. But the option B for Sandra was like, I don't want a legend to win twice because I want to be the true legend. Is like she wanted the narrative to stay where she was still the queen. And we'll talk a little bit here about Sandra and her retirement. Then we get an interesting little scene from Boston Rob. And true to Boston Rob's brand, you know, Boston Rob gives his two cents about how Sandra shouldn't have put her fate in the game into Denise's hands. Boston Rob is correct, but he does come across as very condescending. You know, he comes across as condescending during the game. And also here on Edge, he comes across very condescending. He gives a little Boston Rob lecture. And then we get a nice little confessional from Sandra, how she's still human. She made a mistake. She realizes the mistake she made. And she doesn't want to be on the edge of extinction.
Yeah, I really loved this scene, actually, that like you could see, like if you watch this scene, that Sandra explains what happened, that she gave her idol to Denise. And as she explains the situation that Denise used her own idol to take her out, just if you rewatch the scene, watch Rob's face, watch Amber's face, watch all of them. They all just start to crack a bit of a smile, like they're all just a little bit too pleased that Sandra screwed up so bad.
Oh, yeah.
So,
they love it.
And so Rob is like, why would you do that?
Like, yeah. Yeah. She got a little bit of roasting and Sandra's credit to Sandra. She takes it and she's like, yeah, I messed up, but I'm still the best. And her mentality is really so. Sandra hangs it up here. This is her retirement thing that she's done. She's played four times. She's won twice. She won her first time, her second time, third time and fourth time didn't go as well. But of course, with that Red Alert legacy that she had, it would have been tough for her. She's ready to hang it up. And this was really interesting. She's the first person to quit from Edge of Extinction. Now, there is a percentage of the Survivor fandom that I just want to smack upside the head right now, because this actually, the Survivor fandom doesn't get me like upset very often. This take that some people had, they're wrong. This is not a quit in my book. I mean, I guess it's a quit. She quit, but it's like, how can you not understand where she's coming from here? You know, she's a legend. She's won twice. You do want her to not eat food for 23 days to go play some sort of competition with a Boston Rob, a Tyson. I am with Stephen Fishback. Stephen Fishback had a nice tweet. I am 100% on this side that why should Sandra be there? Leave Sandra. Sandra, there's no reason for Sandra to be there. And there's a large segment of the Survivor community. Russell Hance, I'm calling you out. Your take on this is really bad as well. You are wrong. You're just wrong, Russell. Russell was tweeting about how Sandra's a quitter and she should be ashamed. Absolutely not. I think her decision to leave was absolutely the correct decision. And I'm interested in your take on that, Taryn.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm probably gonna have the most boring take, because it's probably a little bit like in the middle.
Pick a side. You're either with me or you're against me here, Taryn.
So my side is that I think it's silly to have such dramatic sides over this, because like for one thing, there are people who are like, this isn't even a quit. Don't even call it a quit. And I disagree with that. Like, yeah, she quit. She quit the game. It's fine. Quits don't have to be dramatically bad. But she did quit. Like, there's still a chance. Like, you never know what kind of challenge there's going to be. Like, it could be a puzzle. Sandra's not too bad at puzzles. In fact, she's kind of good at puzzles. If it's just a straight up puzzle, which I don't think is remotely, I think there's a very good chance that it's just a puzzle, because that is a fair way to do it. And so if that's the case, then I do think she has a shot at getting back into the game. I wouldn't quit in that spot. I would want to stay. Even if I thought I had no chance to get back into the game, I would want to stay to like play it out and have a vote in the jury and have my say in how things played out. So it's not something that I would do, but at the same time, like, I completely get where she's coming from. She's voted out. She didn't agree with Extinction in the first place. So why would she want to be there? I would have rather her have said Extinction is a dumb concept, so I'm not going to stay here and not giving them anything else. I thought that would have been more fun. But yeah, like it's, you know, I don't think that it tarnishes her legacy. I don't think that it means anything about her as a player. She's already got $2 million. She doesn't have to stay there. She got voted out. It's not like she's, you know, quitting before getting voted out. It's not like she couldn't hack it or anything. So, I'm kind of just in the middle here. Like it happened. It's, it didn't even surprise me all that much. It just is
interesting. I thought you'd be more on my side. I thought you'd be it's interesting. You really are on the fence about this. I'm taking a hard stance on this. I am going to be dramatic and say that this wasn't a quit. I don't think this is a quit in my definition. This is interesting. I do think her legacy is hurt a little bit, but I'll tell you what. It's not because she left Edge. It's because she gave Denise an idol. Yeah. That's where the legacy takes a hit.
Yeah.
You know, Sandra's a legend. She's a two-time legend forever. I think she's one of the greatest players ever. She's in my top three of greatest players ever, but she does fall down a peg here because of the move that, you know, she was in a 3-2 majority. She gives Denise an idol and she gets screwed. That takes a hit. Your legacy has to take a hit if you do that. I do think that is in the realm of like JT level of mess up personally, but no, Sandra, go enjoy your pina colada. We don't need to see you on the edge. Go off queen. And I like this. This is it. This truly will be the last time I think we see Sandra on Survivor.
Yeah.
He's gone.
I think the thing is too, like it was Sandra's original season, right? It was Pearl Islands where Lil, who you never think would have any chance of ever coming back in any kind of anything. Lil is the one that one of the people that returned and then made it to the finals with her. And certainly she won against Lil. But I do disagree with the idea that she had no chance whatsoever of ever coming back into the game. But I also don't care. Like, and yeah, that's why it's like when I call it when I say she quit the game and people are like, it's not a quit. It's like, but I don't care that it's a quit. It's not, I'm not saying it's a quit and therefore she should be disgraced. It's just like, I'm just calling it what I think it is. And I probably have a different, idea of like the negativity associated with that word, that a lot of people do because Probst is very anti-quit and he will like shame anybody that quits the game.
Yeah.
But I don't think Probst is going to shame Sandra. I think that he also will look at this like it's different because it's a different kind of quit.
It's retirement. Edge. It's retirement. You know? Michael Jordan plays 13 seasons with the Chicago Bulls. He retires. You know, he doesn't quit basketball. Sandra doesn't quit Survivor. She retires. She hangs it up. That's what it is in my books. And her legacy should be still very, very high. And I saw a lot of tweets, some fans who, you know, not only have never played Survivor, have never gone off the couch. You know, you're sitting there with your big bag of salt and vinegar potato chips and you're going to call Sandra a quitter. Okay. It pissed me off, man. I saw a lot of tweets out there. It really did. It fired me up. And, but it seems like most of the sensible people are on the page of like, okay, sure, it's a quit, but anyway, that's off my chest.
I think there is one positive from this, which is that, if she hadn't left Edge of Extinction, then we would have had to be like, who's in what place, Sandra or Parvati, because they were voted out on the same night. But now there's a clear delineation.
Oh yeah, so I guess Sandra gets, I guess Natalie and Danny are now, they beat Sandra.
Yeah.
They lasted longer than Sandra.
For those that care, for the guy that's the person that's writing the wiki article, Sandra, you can say thank you.
They talked about this on Know It Alls last night, Rob and Steven. It's like we'll probably see an Edge challenge here in the next couple of days, and after, you know, someone gets back in, I think Danny might raise the mast. You know, I could see Amber just being like, I'm good. We could see a few more quits here coming up, or, you know, retirements, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. I think some people are going to bow out of the Edge. You know, it's crowded there. It looks terrible. It really does look like they're struggling on the Edge of Extinction.
Yeah. Well, we do head over to Cele.
And, LA.
Yule tells us the tribal sucked. It's Wendell created a lot more drama and uncertainty than was necessary. And this episode is just continuing to pile on the heaps of negative Wendell content that we have been getting over the last few episodes.
Villain Wendell is here.
It is overwhelming. I don't like that I don't like Wendell on the show anymore, and I just want him to get his comeuppance and go, because I don't want to dislike him, but he just keeps staying and being such a jerk, and so I'm very conflicted about this whole situation, Kevin.
No, I like it. We have so many amazing personalities. I mean, Wendell is an amazing personality. We need a little villain. You need that black cat. And I'm happy he's here. Keep him on. Oh my God. He's looking bad, dude. And I know it's like,
yeah, like right out the gate. Yeah. He talks with Wendell. Wendell talks to him about tribal. He says, I respect that, Wendell. I respect that you were honest. That's how I am with my friends. Then he has a conversation with Michelle where he apologizes, and she's like, you know, I wasn't uncomfortable. I just think, you know, in the future, it's probably not the best idea. I feel like it's bad for your game. And Wendell's like, thank you for schooling me about how to act at tribal. Do you think I don't know what I was doing last night? I know how to play. Let me play my game, he says to us. If you put me on some kind of leash, I might turn around and bite you.
Yeah.
And Yul points out to Michelle, like, there was a big difference between how he responded to me and how he responded to you. And I felt like it did not show you a lot of respect. And it's such a bad look.
Man, Michelle and Wendell's relationship is confusing. It's a big question mark to me. What happened? So, okay, you don't get along with this guy, but you're, you know, touchy-feely, you're calling him babe. It's a confusing little relationship going on, and I don't know where it's going to go. It really is quite interesting. But yeah, so it seems like Yul. So in this tribe, there's four people. Mm-hmm. There is Yul. There is Wendell, and there is Nick. Those guys were a strong three from the original The Call. They swapped into a five-person tribe with Parvati and Michelle. They got rid of Parvati. So it seems like there's a 3-1 dominating situation. It seems like, you know, Michelle should be in a lot of trouble here. But Michelle's in a lot of conversations. Michelle's talking with Wendell, previous relationship. Michelle's talking with Yul. Michelle's talking with Nick. Hello, Michelle. Oh, my God. I mean, we know you deserve to win your first season, but hello, have you ever come out to play here? This is really impressive. I'm very impressed with Michelle, and her stock is going up, in my opinion, in a spot where historically she should have been in a lot of trouble. She's included in a lot of conversations. It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
So it's quite obvious that Wendell has stirred the pot a little bit, but I don't think Yul played these conversations really well. I think Yul actually, you know, he is a legend. He gets voted out here in this episode. It's very sad. I think a lot of the responsibility falls on Yul. I think he can really only blame himself. So first of all, Yul goes to Wendell and says, hey, I don't like what happened last night. So not only does Yul express to Wendell very honestly that their relationship is rocky, now Wendell knows that Yul doesn't trust him. And that's like really a bad thing to have happen in these reality shows, is when someone knows you don't trust them, then you basically give them the green light to kind of go after you and turn this thing around. So the boys are sloppy here. This 3-1 advantage has fallen apart.
Yeah, this is something that I want to try and piece out here, because I feel like when I was watching, I was blindsided by the fact that Yul went home, because it really felt like it shouldn't have happened. But afterward, I did, like, starting to think about it, I felt like maybe there was just a lot of misdirection in the edit over the last couple of episodes, especially when it comes to Michelle and Wendell's relationship, which, like, when they started on this, when they got to the same, swapped to the same tribe, and I was immediately like, well, obviously Wendell is pulling Michelle in and she's going to be his closest ally.
Yep.
But then I feel like I got tricked by the edit. I bought into this whole, like, oh, they're feuding. They don't like each other maybe as much. Maybe they won't work as closely together, which is exactly what I think the players on the island are falling into that trap as well. But
for sure.
I do wonder that because also I feel like I've also been tricked by the edit surrounding Nick, where Nick said to us in the last episode, directly said to us, I thought I was going to the end with Wendell, him and myself. He's my number one. But I don't like when he's doing this thing with Parvati, you know, offering fire tokens or whatever. And so, like, they're trying to, that confessional was meant to, like, misdirect, like, maybe he'll turn on Wendell. But really, when you look at it, it's him telling us, no, Wendell is my number one. And so if you put these pieces together, it starts to look like the second this tribe swapped to these five people, it was always going to be Michelle, Wendell, and Nick. That Wendell and Nick are each other's number ones. And then obviously Michelle and Wendell have a pre-existing relationship. Whether it's rocky or not, that's still something that they can work with. We've seen exes work together on Big Brother before. We've seen people who hate each other, but still have a pre-existing relationship work together before. Tamar and Candy, in particular, on Big Brother Celebrity 2. And they worked that to their advantage.
Whoa. So, if you have a bingo square at home, cross off a Big Brother Celebrity reference. I did not expect that to come up on this podcast. That's a one for the toolbox.
I feel it's relevant because they genuinely hated each other. They played up the fact that they hated it, and they didn't even have to play it up because they genuinely got into fights.
Yeah.
But just knowing somebody outside of the context of the game is so dramatically different than like even just pre-gaming relationships. And so that bond, I think, was always going to be a very, very solid one, especially in this spot before the merge. And so when you look at it that way, it starts to make a little more sense to me. You know, Michelle going to Wendell in the previous episode and saying, hey, is it all right if I vote your name down in order to trick Parvati into thinking I'm not working with you, so I'll get her tokens? And clearly they made some kind of arrangement where he allowed her to do that, and then she gave him one of the fire tokens as payment.
Yeah,
it feels clear to me that right from the start, it was probably those three. And there was probably some decision making that they were probably still open to. Maybe we will get rid of Wendell. Maybe we will pull Yule in. But at the end of the day, especially with Yule acting the way with Wendell acting the way he did, it almost makes even more sense to keep him around because he's only going to make more of an ass of himself and more of a target of himself. And that's good for them if this is their tight core group to the end.
Yep. Taryn, have you ever given currency to your exes just to make sure you send $50 to an ex from like high school, just be like, hey,
can I trash talk you in order to make money on a podcast? Don't worry, I'll send you half the money I make.
Michelle just gives Wendell a fire token. Here you go, babe. Here you go.
Yeah.
That's what in the edit we're getting confessionals where Michelle says, I want to take Wendell down. Wendell says, don't put me on a leash. I bite you. You know, but then when you actually watch them interact, yeah, it's a little harsh and rough around the edges. But, you know, I think they're locked in for a while.
Exactly.
I think the babe, the touchy feely kind of stuff, they're obviously going to rely on their previous relationship. And as a player who has come back and played a second time, I can attest to that. It's when you meet people in real life and then you're in a game situation with them, that bond runs deep and you know, it's going to be more important than the person you met like a week ago. So yeah, Sele, interesting. So we see that tribe dynamic and I think
Michelle tells us too that she says that Wendell thinks it's her and him to the end. So like, again, like we often get these confessionals where we hear the truth, but it's sort of framed in a negative way. So it doesn't often like just pop out at us, but she says straight up that basically she's saying, I have a final two, some very solid final two with Wendell that he is fully invested in. And he thinks that I'm fully invested in it, but I'm not quite as fully invested in it as he thinks. But she still has a very solid final two with him, which is important to note, I think, moving forward.
The editors, they've made Wendell the decoy boot twice in a row now. And it's like, okay, we've fooled me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on. I don't know what the saying is, but you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I think we're in a grayson now that Michelle and Wendell are in this thing together for quite a while. That's what it appears to me, at least. So a little fun dynamic there with it. We're off to commercial. We come back and guess what? Back to Edge of Extinction, baby.
They are my favorite tribe, I will say. I tweeted that out last week.
Why? I think I audibly groaned. I was like, what? What? So just to follow what's happening in this episode, we go Edge to Sele to Edge. It's like, wait, there's other tribes we need to check in with. What's going on? It's like, why do we have to? They are amazing, but my God, why are we back on the Edge of Extinction?
I feel like I've been flipped. They flipped. Probst flipped me. He flipped me on fire tokens, and now he's flipped me on Edge for the winter season because I'm actually pretty happy that I get to see these people. This scene between Ethan and Parvati, I thought was a really, really good and touching scene. And then the hunt for the fire tokens was also a fantastic. fantastic. No. So no. I'm
save those adjectives for actual Survivor, Terry. Do not use the fantastic and edge. I see why it's good television, but Survivor is better. You know, I understand. Ethan is struggling. This is a great scene. I mean, we're dealing with Ethan and Parvati, two of the most charismatic people in the show's history. It is a great scene. It's just not as good as Survivor, man. Give me Survivor,
it's fair,
bro.
It's fair.
Boston Rob finding fire tokens is just not what I signed up for, but it is what I get. It is good. It just could be better, you know? And so, yeah, we see this scene with Parvati and Ethan. Really touching scene. A lot of eye contact, big smiles. These two people they come across on camera very, very, very well. Ethan is concerned that he's doing some permanent damage to his body, which I don't thank goodness I haven't had any cancer in my family. I'm very uneducated on what cancer can do to your body. But this seems like a concern that could be, you know, you're really putting your body through hell here on edge of extinction. Is Ethan perhaps giving his cancer a good opportunity to relapse? I don't know. I have no answer, but it is a really touching scene where you can really sense the pain and desperation in Ethan's voice.
Yeah. And the fear in his eyes, you know, he's on the verge of tears multiple times. You can see it. And like it's one thing to be told, you know, to be told that he lives in fear every day of relapsing, of this coming back, which sounds terrifying and horrifying. But you can see it in his face in this conversation that he thinks about it all the time, that what if this is the thing that causes it to come back? And living with that kind of fear must be so difficult. And you know, Parvati is there. She is, you know, doing her best. What can you even say to this? Mm-hmm. I saw some people like, oh, she's telling him to do yoga, and then fasting is good for him. But like, it's less about what she's saying and more about, like, I think the message that she's trying to give, which is like, I'm here for you. Like, let's try and take your mind off of this. Let's try to think a little more positively. And, and he tells us that, like, you know, he really appreciates having Parvati there. Talking to her gives him strength. So, you know, I feel like trying to nitpick the specifics of the conversation is not really the right headspace to be in, because I think what we saw was like just a beautiful moment of, two friends, you know, trying to support each other and as much as they can in a really, you know, dire and terrifying situation, which Ethan is always in.
And so, a side note on that too, is, the music's very depressing. You can really sense the pain that people on the edge are going through. They also, this is a little behind the scenes. They also shoot these shots differently. If you really pay attention to the shots of the people that are in the game and the shots of the people that are on the edge, credit to the Survivor production. They use some sort of different lens, some sort of wide angle shot. I don't know. I'm not a television producer, but they really zoom in on the face and you can see the imperfections, you know, the scratches on the face. And it really does give a sense of the pain that these people are going through and how hard it is. So it's an okay scene. It's taken up time from some Electric Tribe, sadly, but it's good. You know, it's good. And then Ethan goes and finds a little box. Everyone gets a little scroll. And oh, here we go. Four brand new fire tokens are in play, and go get them. It's a race.
Yeah, Rob sprints away. Tyson sprints away. Tyson tells us, look, I know Rob is a portly chap. So I know I'll be able to catch him. So I get to the dead end that I know about, and I get a fire token. Cause I'm amazing.
like amazing.
I think just even count everything else out, Kevin, just the fact that I get to see Tyson more, that alone is worth the price of extinction for me.
Episode six, right? This is episode six.
I believe it was episode seven.
Oh, it's number seven. Ooh, okay. It's episode seven. Tyson, I would say, if you had to go through every episode and find the funniest confessional, I think Tyson's like 4 for 7, or maybe even 5 for 7. Like, the best confessional of every episode is from Tyson. The dude is so funny. He's hilarious. The portly chap from Boston Rob was amazing. Funny thing about the scene that I caught on a second watch, and thanks to the know-it-alls last night, is everyone leaves, right? Apparently they were boiling rice.
Yeah.
And Parvati says, what about the rice? If you see in one shot, Amber actually does stay behind and takes the rice off. And that's the mom. You know, Amber has four girls. all these kids on edge of, you know, Rob is like the child of family. He's off to run by these fire tokens. There's a little piece of Amber's brain that is like responsible. She takes the fire to the rice off of the fire. And that was really funny. That's a fun little catch that I had on the second rewatch. As much as I, you know, don't love the Edge of Extinction, I got to give credit to the little editing trick here. Yes. This was really cool. This was, yes, it was really fun. So from the audience's perspective, we see Tyson find a fire token, and then we see chaos. We see them all running around. We don't know who is the fire tokens. This is nice. I love when the audience is actually kept in the dark. And then we have a flashback and we learned, ooh, Mr. Boss and Rob actually scooped up 3 of 4.
It was, yeah, and it was such a coup too, like that he, I still don't even understand fully how he managed to do that. Yeah. That one guy was able to get 3 of them. And so he explains, like, I just went there. I just grabbed them and then I knew what they looked like. So I was able to grab them again in front of Ethan. He didn't even see. And like all the while, like before we see him explain, he's, you know, Tyson has already shown people and he's been like, this is what it looks like. And Rob's like, what? It looks like what? Like, where did you find it? Was it in a tree? And Tyson's like, you didn't find any, did you? And he's like, no. And he just like pulls down his shorts, like, see, like, look, I got nothing. He start frisking people. And then he's like, yeah, nobody knows, but I got them all.
A lot of stripping this year, a lot of clothes being removed, a lot of nudeness, a lot of searching. Rob is the TSA this year, man. He strips everyone. Nothing can get by Rob. He is a big fan of everyone expose their secrets. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Rob gets 3 of 4, which is impressive. We get a cocky little confessional, and Rob is a legend. Absolutely. He says, I'm batting 750. I'm the best that ever played from Boston Rob.
3 out of 4. We're in the majors.
3 out of 4. I went back to the Survivor analyst. I went to find some Survivor stats, Taryn. Rob is 1 of 5. He's played 5 times. He's won once. So in my books, he's batting 0.2, which is good. He's batting 20%. You know, he's not batting 750. The metric that we use to analyze greatness, I think, is wins divided by times played. That's the metric I use that I think is the most important one. And Rob is a legend, but like, come on, man, you're on Edge of Extinction and you're going to talk trash. There should be a rule where you're not allowed to talk trash on the Edge of Extinction. Well, you got to be in the game to talk trash. I think that should be a thing going forward.
Technically, he hasn't lost the season yet.
You're right.
He could still win.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, he's actually a favorite to come back in, and I think he has the best chance from Edge of Extinction. You're right. You're right. Yeah. He might go 2 of 5, but it's like, man, you got voted up. All right.
Also, though, when we look at Rob's record, do we give him like half credit
for Island of the Idols?
For All Stars, for getting himself and his wife to the final.
Yeah,
two.
I get that. You're right. There is some the metric of wins divided by times played, win percentage is not a great metric. There's definitely some, but it's one of the best ones we have, you know. And he didn't win. He didn't win All Stars. He didn't win. He got second.
All right. Okay, so we move on to DeKal, which is just consistently.
Oh, one final note.
Oh, yes.
One final note to wrap up The Edge, and then we don't have to talk about it anymore. I am being hard on The Edge. It is great television, but the rest of the season is so electric. The episode title is actually We're in the Majors. It comes from Boston Rob. Let's make another rule. No episode titles from Edge of Extinction. It's just not a thing, okay?
You're very anti-Edge.
Very anti-Edge, dude. And I can sense you're not as anti-Edge as you used to be. And
I've
I'm like
flipped. I yeah, was in your alliance, flipped, but Probst flipped me. I'm sorry,
you're
man.
On me, so it's just me. It's just me preaching from the rafters. Yeah. all right. We're in the Majors was the title episode. Let's keep that away from Edge of Extinction going forward.
Dirty please. Dancer in the chat says the title should have been Portly Fellow, and I agree. Portly Chap, I believe it was.
That would have been pretty funny. So we're off to DeKal. And this is a fun group. I like this group.
It's the best group. DeKal has consistently been the happiest tribe. Sure. They're always like playful. Even after the most cutthroat move of the season happens, they're still just like happy-go-lucky. This is a great tribe.
And there's something to be said for, I think they're eating really well over there. Wendell built that amazing shelter on T'Call. I think they're sleeping pretty well. You know, so just to break down who this is, because I know this can get all confusing, especially if you're listening on audio. T'Call is a 4-person tribe. Remember, Sandra just got blindsided by Denise. So now we have Jeremy and Denise from former Cele. And we also have Tony and Kim from former T'Call. So it seems to be a bit of a 2-2 split here, and we have a scene where Tony's running around the beach like an old man, so Tony's still having fun, but
Kim says I want to see you run, Tony.
Yeah,
so he just starts up in a sprint, and then Jeremy's just like, he runs like an old man.
It was really good, and they have a little chat on the beach about how Denise took out the queen. And I know we didn't talk about last week's episode. I think it's pretty clear that the double idol play was pretty epic, but maybe a small mistake. Maybe you just play the idol on yourself, Denise, keep another one in your pocket. There's definitely an argument for that, because now she looks like she might be in a little bit of a bad spot potentially. But
it is definitely possible.
She's got some relationships.
I don't know if you how deeply you dove into that move, but something that we sort of discovered after the fact, because Sandra has talked about it, was that Sandra, because in the episode it was portrayed as Sandra trying to get Tony out, but actually Sandra was telling Denise, use the idol and vote Jeremy out.
Oh.
Which is why Denise felt like, well, obviously Sandra's going to put a vote on Jeremy just in case, because she wants him out. So I'll need to play the idol on Jeremy just in case, in order to make sure that my move goes through. And because, like, if she plays the idol and Sandra does the correct thing and puts a vote on Jeremy, then she just tried to betray Sandra, still loses Jeremy, and now is completely screwed.
That makes a little more sense. I can see where that's coming from.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this T'Call group is a really fun group.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show.
I tweeted about this, Jeremy has always been a favorite player of mine, and I made the decision this week. He is my number one favorite player of all time. Survivor history, 40 seasons, Jeremy is my favorite player of all time. I love this guy, man. Are you seeing what he's doing this season? Are you kidding me? Come on, dude. This dude is a Survivor professional, man. So just to recap Jeremy's journey, he loses his good friend Natalie. And obviously there's some good play there. They get targeted as a pair. Natalie takes the fall, and he instantly doesn't overreact. He's cool as a cucumber, gets back in the good graces. Look at this spot he's in, man. Everyone on this tribe wants to work with him. 4-person tribe. Tony wants to work with Jeremy because they want to keep shields around. Kim wants to work with Jeremy. They're always having conversations. Denise just played an idol on Jeremy, and Jeremy has fire tokens. He has safety without power. He, in my opinion, is the favorite to win this game right now. He's the number one horse. If there was betting lines in Vegas, he would be the number one spot right now. This guy is awesome. I love this guy.
I think you're completely right. I think that for a while I've been saying I feel like Sophie is in the best spot in the game. I think that Jeremy might have overtaken her. We'll definitely need to see what happens when the merge comes. But he is in a very killer spot. The reason why Sandra wanted to take Jeremy out, she said, was because she was jealous of his relationship with Tony. And so she wanted to remove Jeremy so that Tony wasn't going to flip on her to go with Jeremy. And Denise said, I'd rather take out Sandra than Jeremy. So we see Tony. He talks to us. He says he feels good with Kim and Jeremy. Now he's happy that Denise has made herself a bigger target with the big move on Sandra. She's dethroned the queen with her own bullet. And you paid her half price for that bullet. Denise, you're a legend. This is great. You'll be targeted just like us. So she's now like she submitted her resume and Tony has accepted it into the lion club, she is no longer a hyena. She is now one of the lions. But Jeremy doesn't love that, because he was like really good in with Tony as a big target, but now if there's other big targets as well, then you know that's not as good. And I think Jeremy feels like Denise, okay, she's improved her, you know, target status for sure, but this guy Tony, he's still the biggest threat on this island. I'm not taking my eye off of this guy. So we know that Jeremy is, he's in tight with Tony. Tony seems to trust him, but Jeremy is, he's no LJ. He's not gonna yep. take his eye off the ball.
For sure. And that's what makes Jeremy so good, is he has these relationships and he just knows how to play them so well. I have a hot take here, Taryn. I want to hear where you landed this. I don't know if this is a hot take, but I'm going to throw it out there. I believe this to be true. Safety without power is better than an idol. I would rather have safety without power than an immunity idol. What's your take? Would you agree?
Would I agree? I think they have different value in different circumstances. What is the proposal here? What is the
overall value? So if I'm on the game and production can either hand me safety without power or an idol, I take safety without power. Obviously, it depends on the situation, but as a blatant rule, I think it's a better advantage. I'll tell you why. Option A, there's no safety without power nullifier.
And now that alone, I think, solves it.
Now in the world of the idol nullifier, back in the day, if you had an idol, you had a 100% chance to survive that round and survive another 3 days. And that, to me, is the most important thing in Survivor, is you need to do everything possible to survive the current round you're in. I know people say they want to set yourself up for the future, but the game is so fast paced and changes so much. I think the main mentality should be survive 3 days at a time. Do whatever you can to make it through the round. So Jeremy in his pocket has a power that will 100% allow him to move forward. So I think that's clear as well. Reason B why it's better than an idol is because, especially on this season, voting for people is actually not that great. And I'll tell you why, because once you vote someone out, they go to Extinction Island, they sit there, they dwell, they're pissed. Those are the jury members. They come back. So the fact that Jeremy can say, I'm good, I'm out of here at any time and just peace out. He doesn't have to vote for someone, which I actually think is a benefit. He doesn't have to make an enemy. He gets to let everyone have a messy tribal, come back, pick up the pieces. So yeah, idols are cool, but I think this power is more powerful.
Yeah, I think those are fair points. I think that take the nullifier away. I think that the idol gives you more options, but the safety without power is more useful in specific circumstances. So I could go either way, but I think the biggest point there is that, yes, I didn't think about this. Idols can be nullified. Safety without power cannot be nullified. That alone, I think, tips the scales dramatically in favor of safety without power.
For sure. It's interesting. I had that thought. I wrote it down. I don't know if that's a hot take in the community, but I'm pretty sure on that stance of safety without power is better. We go to Kim Spradlin, who Kim's rallied a little bit, man. And I was worried. Kim's also one of my favorite players of all time. She got off to a bad start. It seems like she's rallied. It seems like she's back. First of all, correct me if I'm wrong, she has her idol still. She has her idol, which is big. And now she has options. And this is prime Kim Spradlin. Kim Spradlin with options is one world Kim Spradlin. Her whole game was about having options and taking the best one. I actually tweeted that the best duo in Survivor history is Kim Spradlin and options. And I got that Kim Spradlin retweet, which was big. Made me very happy Wednesday night. So thank you, Kim, for that. Kim's talking about options. Kim has some, you know, Kim could stay with Tony from DeKalb. But Kim and Denise are really, really on the same page here. They have some really good conversations. And this is the moment where, again, it just reminds me what kind of Survivor fan fiction we're in right now. You know, to have Denise and Kim locking in here and making a run at this thing is just so amazing. This is crazy. This is different eras. These are different seasons all coming together in one beautiful, beautiful season. And people are... There's a lot of people in the community that are worried that we're going to have game changer downside, because in game changers, we lost all the legends and then we had some people, you know, not to throw names, but Froizen and fan favorites, Sierra Dawn Thomas. Like, we had some weak members in there. There's no weak members in this cast. I'm still super pumped. We have lost some people. I would have liked to see play some more, but the remaining 12 we have, it's like, bring it on. This is not going to be game changers. We are going to have an electric finish. And I'm very excited. And yeah, it seems like Denise and Kim really want to make a run at this thing together.
I mean, what we hear from Kim is she talks to Jeremy. She says, I really want to make sure that we're on the right footing heading into the merge. If we're off when we head in, I feel like we'll just get picked off. I don't want that to happen. She tells us that she feels good. She loves Tony. But she really likes Jeremy and Denise, Jeremy in particular. She could be convinced, she could be convinced to go with Jeremy and Denise if that's the way things went. She likes having options and feeling in control again. She talks with Denise. She says that same conversation. We need to head into the merge with the right plan. Denise seems very much on board with her. Denise says, I feel like there's a solid three with me, Jeremy, and Kim. There are big targets in very small places. And I'm just here to play like everyone else, says Denise. Now, there, I think we got a little bit more clarity on the situation in a secret scene from Kim. She said in a secret scene that she really wanted to win immunity because it will limit her options if she has to send Denise home or Tony home.
Yeah.
Which tells me that she's very solidly with Jeremy, that Denise is the primary option to send home, but Tony is a secondary option to send home. Just based on the way she said that, right? So that seems to be where Kim stands, and great for Kim, also great for Jeremy. Yeah. that he has. I mean, these two together is a quite the dynamic duo. So that seems to be where we are with the Dekal tribe. And then we head over to what seems like the complete opposite of the call.
Yara. Let's go check out with Yara, the green tribe.
Yes.
Oh, hello, Yara. And just to set this up for everyone, Yara has four people. We have Sarah and Sophie, who are a duo, and Adam and Ben, who are, I love the Adam-Ben relationship. It's one of my favorite relationships of the whole season. It's so funny. It's so bad and so funny. Adam and Ben are not on the same page here.
Yeah, right away. The great line from Sophie. She says that we don't usually have leftovers on Survivor, but we're eating the peanut butter and jelly. And I'm hoping the peanut butter can stick us together a little more, because there's been some real tension bubbling beneath the surface in this tribe,
for sure.
Which definitely sets the stage for the Adam and Ben bickering about where's the idol? Where is it?
Where's this idol? Where is it? Ben, do you have it? You found a million idols your first season. Ben, do you have the idol? We have a really great dynamic here. First of all, Ben does a little peanut butter jelly. Peanut butter jelly. And we've seen this Ben a couple of times where he's dancing. Ben's loose out there. He's fun. Mm-hmm. He's fun. Ben is fun this season. Come on, man. And the Survivor community is like, Ben had a weak win. I put him as one of the weakest winners the first time. He's fun, though, man. He's fun this season. I'm so happy he got on because he's playing loose. And I think Ben's stock is rising.
I thought he had a great episode last week when he talked about overcoming the challenge of Boston Rob, which is the time he looked the most foolish this season with Boston Rob. But he was able to become the winner of that sort of battle. And then it seems like he is definitely a lot more in with Sophie and Sarah than Adam is, that Adam was the one who was in danger if this tribe lost. And it seems like that is part of the tension between Adam and Ben now, as Ben is now firmly with Sarah and Sophie, and Adam's just like kind of annoyed about that. And feels interrogated about this idol situation.
And Taryn, I just want to say, if my tone on this podcast is ever aggressive, please let me know. We can podcast like this. We can podcast like this. That was a fun scene when Ben inflated his voice like that. That was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
You can see the communication is bad between Adam and Ben. No eye contact. Adam's looking away, not on the same page, not trusting. So, I mean, we kind of saw this happening. Remember, so when we swapped tribes, this was a 5-person tribe, and Adam, Ben, and Rob were all from the original Selly, and they had no trust. And sure enough, those three have fallen apart. So credit to Sarah and Sophie, who got swapped in the minority and have basically ran the show. These two girls are in charge of this tribe right now.
Yeah. They didn't even have to use their advantages.
They got all their tools. They did it through their own social gameplay. So I have to coming in preseason, Sarah Lucina was very low on my risk on my list in terms of win equity. I was wrong. Sarah Lucina, I apologize. You are a star. You are a Survivor professional. Oh my God, I was underrating you. You are very good at this game. I had it wrong. Amazing. She's an incredible player. Top 20, top 15, maybe even top 10 all time. That's how good she is playing this season.
Yeah. And I feel like it's I don't know if it's bad luck, if it's coincidence, because we both love Adam. We both hung out with Adam.
We love Adam. I love Adam. He's one of my best buddies in real life.
Yeah, but
I love him, but the show is making
the second time you've come in a row, like the first time you were on was the time like he really screwed up with Boston Rob. And now this time just looks so foolish in this episode where he says he is so confident. He's convinced that between Ben and Sarah, they have an idol. They're only pretending to look for it, which he's just frustrated with. He says, there's a chance I'm wrong. And if I am, I'll feel like an idiot. But there are a few times in Survivor I've felt as confident about something as I do about this. Ben or Sarah, it's one of them. They have the idol. Yeah. And it's just like, why go out on a limb like that, Adam? Like,
There's three people,
and you chose the two that don't have it. Oh man, this. Yeah.
First of all, Adam does come across looking a little silly, and I said this last time, and I said this time. The Survivor community is pretty hard on Adam right now. He's getting a little bit of social media hate. I don't like to see it because remember, Adam's a one-time player, one-time winner. He won the game. He got $1 million, and he's still alive. He's not on the edge this year. It's been scrappy. It's been messy, but he's still in the game. He's going to make the merch. There's a chance. So to say Adam is a bad Survivor player is completely insane. And some people are going with that narrative. It's mind-boggling. He's very good at this game. But there's been some tough moments. The thing is, his read here is the idol is found. That is correct. The idol is found. He just doesn't know exactly where it lies. And the one person it seems like he actually trusts on this little tribe is Sophie.
Which, good on Sophie.
Sophie is... number two in my spot in terms of win equity. If I had to rank everyone, I think Jeremy's one, Sophie's number two, and I think Kim just got number three, which is crazy considering how bad Kim started this game. But yeah, so Adam's getting spun around in circles on this tribe right now, and the merge coming up is going to be very important for him to reset.
Yeah, and there's a series of events here where Adam asks Sophie about, you know, he thinks that Sarah or Ben have the idol, and then Sophie tells Sarah about it, and so then Sarah confronts Adam like, hey, I don't want any rumors going into the merge that I have an idol that I don't have. And then Adam's like, now I have to do damage control when I'm convinced that they're the ones lying to me? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This whole tribe appears to be a big mess, and I have a feeling that it's not gonna. I mean, they all four of them seem to have like big roles in the game, but I don't think these people are sticking together.
No.
I think that Ben could stick with Sarah and Sophie. I don't see Adam sticking with them.
And you can sense it. This is why my heart broke a little bit for Adam. Is he's still in the game, but the way these three talk to him, it's not. I have a tough time even describing it. They're annoyed with him. They don't respect him, and which is really not good for Survivor, man. If you lose people's respect, like, you can be the enemy, but like someone like Rick Devens, he was the enemy, but they respected him. If he got to the end, he was going to win. It's going to be tough for Adam to navigate post merge. And if he gets to the final three, I mean, how is he going to turn this narrative around? How is he going to get this group of winners to vote for him as the winner? It seems like even on his own cele, his new Yara tribe, he's lacking respect, and it breaks my heart because I think his win equity is very low right now, and it's so sad because he's one of my best buddies in life, and I think he's an awesome Survivor player. I don't see a path for Adam to get a second W here, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, like, I think he looks foolish in the episode, but like, as far as the game has gone, I don't think he's done anything dramatically foolish. I think that he definitely made a mistake on original Cele with the Rob situation. I think that he was trying to get somewhere and he was just too ambitious and it fell apart. But it wasn't like a Sandra level mistake. And then here, like, yeah, he has a misread on who has the idol and that's not great, but it's not like a game ending, you know, misread. It just looks very foolish. And it makes him look like a fool on the show. So, it's more of like a bad look than I think it is like evidence that he's a bad player. Although they are still mistakes and that's still something to account for.
Do you know what's the best thing for Adam right now? Merge, get with Nick. get with Wendell, get with Michelle, get with some of these new players that understand his vibe a little bit more, because he needs to reset. He needs to find a group that respect him and trust him, and he just doesn't have that right now on Yaris. So an upcoming merge would be big for Adam.
I think so too, but I do wonder, like, does he fit in there? Because it's Sophie and Sarah that have the original DeKal connections to Wendell and Nick, and then Adam and Michelle did not leave off on the best of terms on original Cele. So I don't know if he fits in there, which means he has to maybe try for Jeremy, who also wasn't on the best of terms with him on original Cele. Yeah. So then where does he go to Tony maybe, but he's not exactly a big target. So I don't know if Tony wants to work with him. I just don't know where he finds.
I'm with you, Theron. Kim Spradlin has options. Adam Klein has very little options.
I'm trying to figure out
because I love this guy, man. And it's just, he's in terms of, like, if there's 12 people in the game, if I was to rate Winequity, he's number 12, sadly. It's or number 11, but
I think his, of the list. Yeah, his only in at this point is Denise, who I think he managed to have at least a somewhat, I don't know where they left off. We never really heard from Denise how she felt about the whole Adam situation. It did seem like he was the next one to go on original Cele, and so I can't imagine it's like a fantastic relationship, but at least it's something. And then maybe if Denise can help him get in with some people, if they need some numbers, I feel like that's really the only path forward here at this point. But we also don't know, like, who's coming back from Edge and how that might change things. So
there's some game left, Adam.
Adam, like I said, I think he's a very capable player. He's always kind of played from a bottom position. Like, he's never been a dominant player. He's always been kind of dodges, like, rolls with the punches kind of player. So I you know, as long as he's in the game, I think he's always got a shot. But yeah, I do think
in poker we have a term, it's called a chip and a chair. If you have a chip in a poker tournament, you still get dealt cards, you are still playing, you have a shot. Adam is still dealt in, he's just a short stack. He needs a good run of advantages, he needs a good run in challenges, he needs something, he needs to pick up the aces a couple of times and double up. So he has a chip and a chair. It's just, it's looking grim though.
It is. It's looking grim. We head to the immunity challenge. And ooh, I have to say, I was really looking forward to, because we've had some big reactions at the immunity challenge from, like, people who got voted out. Boston Rob, huge reaction. Everyone was like, what? Yeah. So I was like waiting, like, Parvati and Sandra. Sandra has to be a massive blindside, even if Parvati was kind of expected. No response. We don't get any reaction.
Good point. Where did that? I didn't even think of that. Where was the reaction?
We didn't even see the scene. We never heard Prope say they get in the first chance to look at the other tribes. We didn't. It was completely cut out.
Huh.
Oh, good, I'm here. I'm seeing deleted reward challenge.
Oh, that's right. They mentioned this on Know It Alls. There was a reward challenge that didn't make the episode. I forgot about that.
Hmm. There you go.
Which is good. We don't either put reward with immunity, or we don't need to see reward. There's just not enough time.
I agree.
We don't. Yeah.
Keep it. And I will say, I prefer extinction to reward challenge.
Terrence.
As long as the reward challenge is deleted and I lose my reaction shot.
You really got flipped on Edge. I got flipped on fire tokens. The Edge is still not doing it for me.
All right. Well,
yes, we're off to the challenge. There are three tribes of four people left, so no one sits out. Sandra, it's fitting. Sandra is now gone. Now no one should sit on her throne, the sit-out bench. That no one gets to sit out here. And we got the old saucer challenge. Throwback to David versus Goliath, where we had a legendary tribe really botch this. Remember this tribe? I got it written down. Angelina, Nick, Mike White, and was the fourth Lyrsa? I can't remember who the fourth was.
It's possible.
Was it Natalie Cole? I can't remember. But this was a throwback where historically in that David versus Goliath, they lost the challenge in, like, historic fashion, and it was the biggest blowout in Survivor history. By the way, you know, Jeff uses biggest blowout in Survivor history quite a few times.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, we got a very heavy saucer. You got to fill it up with water. You got to drop the puzzle pieces, And then you got to solve. I got to say, this puzzle looked a little easier. This one looked a little bit of an easier puzzle than some other ones. And
like the difficult part was like fitting it in the hole, as we eventually saw. It's like scrambling to get it in. But there's something that people have noticed during this challenge, which is that when transferring the big saucer for the Yara tribe, that people have noticed that Sophie's shorts disappeared and reappeared as they were crossing the balance beam.
A little editing trick.
Yes.
Who picked up on that? That's smart.
And it's like, there's a clip of it. It's shocking. What happened to her shorts? How did she pull them off and then put them back on while on a balance beam? The only explanation I have here is that, it actually took more than one trip for Yara, and probably more than two trips for the other tribes. That was redundant in the challenge. They wanted to cut for time. It was something similar happened in the premiere challenge where they actually went more rounds than we saw in the episode, and so that would be my guess that they took out one of the trips.
Catch. Whoever found that, well done. I watched the episode twice and I didn't see that. That's really, because I had it written down that the one trip from Yara, they went slow and steady and they got the job done, but you're right. I guess it took more. That's so interesting. So Yara gets the pieces first. They solve the puzzle pieces first. Sophie and Ben destroy the puzzle, and underreported story I tweeted is like, Sophie Clark is now a challenge piece. Holy moly, she's killing the challenges this year.
She's always been great at puzzles.
She's been good at the challenges, but now she
was the Aussie killer in her original season. That's how she won the game.
I know, but like, I knew she was good, but she's not only good, she's good. She's great at these challenges. Puzzles, physical, she's an amazing tribe challenge performer. It's unbelievable. I wrote that down. It's like, she is a rock star at these things.
Yeah. I'm with Yule gone, you know, I feel like, you know, my loyalties are torn. I feel like there are still some people left that I really want to see win. Obviously many of them, but like really, really want to see. Jeremy's definitely one of them. Sophie, really, really one of them. I really want to see Sophie do well. I'm really loving her on this season. I'm just like, I'm pulling for her.
And she's good at challenges. She's great at the social game. She's holding on to that idol, and her confessionals are fun. Funny, man. I don't remember South Pacific. I don't remember Sophie being funny on South Pacific. I guess there's a couple of confessionals about Brandon Hance that were amusing, but like, she's hilarious. I'm a big fan of Sophie this year. Ben, very good at the challenge. And then we have DeKal get second by just a second here. Denise and Jeremy were on the puzzle, and they get it in just the nick of time before Michelle and Wendell miss out this challenge by just a second. And this was interesting. Explain this. I think I understand, but Wendell was calling Jeff over because he knew the puzzle was almost done, correct?
That's what it seemed like. So yeah, and they did talk about this on Know It Alls, where like, there's so much talk about Wendell screwing up, and that if Wendell had kept his eye on the prize more, that they definitely would have won this. But I don't know where that narrative comes from.
It was a stupid narrative, because what do you mean he wasn't talking trash. He was getting Jeff to come over, because remember in Ghost Island,
exactly,
he lost a challenge because he didn't call the puzzle. He finished the challenge ahead of Laurel in Ghost Island. He didn't call Jeff over, and he lost because now he's calling Jeff over ahead of time, which is smart. Steven pointed out that calling Jeff over also makes the other tribe panic. Another secondary benefit. So there's also this narrative that they lost the challenge because of Wendell, but I watched the tape. Michelle falls down. You want to talk about losing the challenge by a second? Michelle falls down, and she gets up with no hustle, no, she was very lethargic, and she wasn't focused. Like, what are you talking about, Michelle? You lost the challenge, honey. Like, I couldn't get over this. It didn't make any sense that they were blaming this on Wendell.
You know what? I was confused about that too, because they all ran over the balance beams, and then Michelle falls and then just gets straight up and then runs the rest of the way not on the balance beam. And so I was like, did they not have to run on the balance beams at all? In which case, why were they? Or did they have to? And why does Michelle get a pass and not have to go back, or at least come back up on the balance beam to finish it out?
Yeah, I agree, dude. It was very strange.
Confused.
Michelle falls down. She gets up. She's chatting to Jeff, and it was like she was out for an afternoon jog. So, like, the fact that she was blaming Wendell was kind of mind blowing. I don't know where that came from. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I guess it's possible, like, because they seem so convinced that this was Wendell's fault. I guess it's possible that, like, there was something more that was cut out. But I don't know why they wouldn't have included that. You know. Who knows.
I mean, Wendell's definitely cocky. He's cocky. And yeah, I kind of like it.
It was worse. It was worse than the previous challenge. Yeah, he was like, watch this one, Jeff.
So that was kind of mind blowing. Quick note is, like, challenges have been good this year. You know, the social strategy of Survivor is the best, and that's the best content. But, like, yeah, credit to the challenge. There've been some good challenges. I've been digging the challenges this year. And one final note here that I love. This is my favorite. So congratulations, Sally. Congratulations. Congratulations, Yara. Congratulations to Call, you win immunity. And then, so it's Jeff and the four losing members of Sele. And he's like, this is my favorite part. He's like, Nick, how does this feel? Because remember, you lost this challenge twice now. He's like, remember, you lost last time. You
lose again.
Yeah, yeah. He just rubs it in. He's just like, you know, Nick, you really suck at this challenge, buddy.
Yeah.
I love when Jeff gets sassy and rubs a little salt in. I love when Jeff becomes not too much. I love when Jeff definitely gets in some insults. Jeff is good. Jeff is doing awesome this year, man. A couple of the previous seasons, 39, 38, it's like, wait, is Jeff checking out a little bit? Like, there was no enthusiasm. His facial expressions weren't smiling enough. Every time there's a shot of Jeff, it just looks like he's beaming. Because obviously this all winter season is incredible, but, like, credit to Jeff for bringing some energy this year. He's doing awesome.
I've never seen Jeff happier than at Tribal when Yule is talking about how great the fire tokens are. And Jeff is just like, it's a great game, isn't it? Like, he has just never had a more genuine, just very happy, pleased smile on his face in his life. He's so happy about himself.
Yeah, Jeff Probst. Like, I
tweeted, doubted me. Yeah, this is great.
I tweeted an apology to Jeff, and we were all wrong about the fire tokens. The fire tokens have definitely come through. Mm. So, in terms of the show, we have Sele going back to Tribal. We have again, Sele is Nick, his three boys, and Michelle. And I would have preferred some other tribes going to Tribal. I thought there were some more interesting dynamics, but, like, I'm down for this. We got back-to-back tribals for this group.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I felt like if Yara had lost, we would be losing Adam, and I was like, I don't want to lose Adam.
Yeah.
If DeCall had lost, I thought at the time that we'd probably lose Tony. I don't know if that was a right read or not, but I was like, I don't know. I definitely don't want to lose Tony. And so I was actually kind of like, I feel safest about Sele. I feel like Sele, I feel safe. I feel like, we're not going to lose Yule, right? Like, Yule should be safe. And that was because I was tricked. The misdirection got me. I should have seen the writing on the wall there, but I was rooting for DeCall to beat Yara Sele because I was like, I don't want to lose Tony. And, yeah. But now it's like, it's again, it's like, at what cost? Yeah. Like, what have I done?
And that's a credit to Robin and Steven. They've been on over this all year. Is like, when you go from two large tribes to three tribes, it's like bigger names get taken out. There's less options. There's less room to play when you're dealing with a tribe of five or four. It's like, yeah, some heads are going to roll. The legends are going to get taken out because, like, what other options are there? If you have a tribe of 7, 8, 9, or 10, then, you know, there's some room to move. There's some chaos, and I'm ready for the merge. We see in the next time we're going to the merge. I love it. Perfect time for the merge. 11 people. Let's get this thing messy. Let's see some chaos. I'm down for it. I'm really glad we're leaving. These last couple episodes have been good. That's good content. Great season. But I'm really happy that we're going to go to the merge. I think it's the perfect time for it.
You know, I really thought that, like, it felt to me like the perfect time was this episode.
Even
split of four people on each tribe. So you head into a merge situation where each tribe is of equal strength and there's three of them. And so, like, what does that do for the dynamics? And it felt like the right time. But they had to go one more. We go from Yule, maybe the winner of the season, to Yule pre-merge.
Oh, that hurts. The fact that they lost that challenge by a second and then Yule goes out it hurts, man. It hurts badly, but I mean, it's still a very, very good episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, we go to commercial, we come back, and well, Sally's off to tribal, and this is really interesting. This is a little inside baseball and what my mind was thinking. Do you remember that we have a shot of this praying mantis? Do you remember this?
Yep.
An intense shot of this praying mantis eating another insect. And I turned to Peely on the couch and I said, that's on purpose. The editors put that in there on purpose. And I had a little conspiracy theory. So for praying mantises, they're insects. After they mate, it is usually common for the female to eat the male. It's pretty disgusting. They mate, they have babies. Then the husband gets eaten as food. And I thought that was on purpose. I really thought Michelle was going to get Wendell. I thought that was in there on purpose as a reference to Michelle turning on her former lover, Wendell, and taking him out. And boy, that prediction could not have been more wrong. But so
I think it still has some relevance. I think that this is a story. It's just that it's going to be lasting a bit longer. Gotcha. I think that Michelle will eventually eat Wendell. I think that is eventually what's going to happen. But we're just delaying the inevitable at this point.
Yeah, I made the call, and sadly, what happens here, man? How do Yule, Nick, and Wendell just mess this up so much? Specifically, Yule. So we see a conversation. Yule and Nick talk about voting out Wendell, and it's because of the challenge. He was showboating during the challenge. He's cocky. He's obviously here for himself. Wendell's not very much of a team player. So it really seems like Yule and Nick. Nick is entertaining it. But you got to think Nick is lying in this scene, obviously, based off the result.
Yeah. And again, that's why I feel like, and I could be wrong because we don't really see a lot of evidence for this here. But it does feel like to me that like right away, what this tribe did was they were like, Wendell was like, Michelle's with me. Mm-hmm. Like she's with us 100% always. And so right away, it was like Parvati is the odd one out. And then when they go to tribal and it goes down the way it does, and Michelle gives a fire token to Wendell, I think at that point, Yule starts to probably become a little bit worried. Like, hold on, Yule is more loyal Wendell is more loyal to Michelle than he is to me. I always knew that that Nick and Wendell were very tight because it was there was a foursome. It was Yule and Sophie, and then Wendell and Nick. And so from my perspective, I think that what Yule is doing makes a lot more sense when you start to look at it from this perspective of Yule probably knew I'm in trouble here. This is not by old tribal lines anymore. This is these two are in a relationship or were in a relationship and are very, very tight. Mm-hmm. And so and then Nick is very tight with Wendell, and we all wanted to stick together. You can see the disappointment in Nick's eyes. He really wanted the four of them to stick together. He did not want to have to lose Yule. But it felt like at that point, Yule was trying to just be like, okay, who is the best person for me to target amongst these three? It seems like the most amount of trouble is with Wendell. And so the Wendell is like, if you look at it from the perspective of there's a tight three and Yule is on the outs and he's trying to find the crack, then it makes a little more sense what he's doing when he's like trying to get them to go against Wendell. Like don't go with him, choose me instead. But obviously this is, it's not going to work out for him.
Yeah, it does not work out for him. And it just seemed like Yule lost the narrative a little bit. It really seemed like he lost focus. He really got obsessed with these fire tokens, didn't he?
Well, this is an interesting thing that I think is something to talk about here, that Yule asked Michelle, like, are you down to vote out Wendell? And she's like, mm-hmm. Like it's basically not a great response. Like she says yes, but it's not a great response. And then she's kind of like distant and he's like, are you okay? Like, is everything all right? Cause this is like bad news for Yule if she's not with him. And she's like, yeah, you know, I'm just concerned about this fire token. Cause I gave him a fire token and now I'm going to vote him out. She's lying to him right now. I'm going to vote him out and I'm going to lose my fire token. And so like I took this scene to mean, like from Yule's perspective, like, okay, well, if she's telling me the truth and like this is causing her to consider keeping you, Wendell over me so that she doesn't lose that fire token, then, how about this? What if I present a scenario to you where we get to keep his fire tokens, as a way of like keeping her on board? But again, like that's entirely based on my read of where Yule was at the time. Hopefully we'll be able to find out from Yule what he was thinking. The way that the edit portrayed it definitely was a lot more in line of like Yule getting lost in the plot of the fire tokens. And I think that's also a valid read on the situation. But I did want to just present like, you know, an alternative thing, because it felt like things didn't make complete sense the way it was portrayed. And so I feel like, you know, if you look at it from a different perspective, things make more sense, but it's still hard because we don't, I mean, there's a lot we're not seeing.
That's a good breakdown. That would make a little more sense, because it does seem like Yule gets a little, he wants them to vote out Wendell, and they want to pretend that Michelle's not into it. And then so Wendell will give his fire tokens to Michelle, and then maybe Yule get a fire token. It just felt a little too fancy. You know,
and that's the thing too. I don't even know what this plan was. Like, it was never fully described in the episode because it doesn't actually make a lot of sense. The way it was described, where it's basically like, you tell Wendell that you're going to vote with Wendell against me, but then actually don't do that.
Yeah.
But why would that do anything? Like, why would that? He would just feel like he just got stabbed, and it would make him, I feel, less likely to give fighters. So was the plan perhaps that Michelle was supposed to actually vote with Wendell and then have Nick vote with Yule and have it be a tie, and then make Wendell pissed at Nick, and then have Michelle like flip on the tie? So like, sorry, I can't draw rocks. And then maybe at that point, Wendell, like, there's a chance that Wendell gives his tokens to Michelle. But like, that's that's the only thing I can think of based on what little we saw. But there had to be more to this plan, because like the base plan that we saw just doesn't make any sense at all.
Your narrative of it was 3-1 and then Yule was throwing shit at the fan, just trying to make something happen, that makes a little more sense. Because what Survivor 101 again, as from someone who's never played Survivor, I guess I would assume that like your whole mission should be to survive the round. Same thing on Big Brother or Survivor. Your whole goal is like, yes, you need to plan for the future, but you also just need to survive the round. You need to survive the week or the 3 days, whatever it is on Big Brother or Survivor. And so the fact that these players are putting so much emphasis into these fire tokens, and they don't even know what they are yet. It seems like a couple of these players are getting their heads spun around because of these fire tokens. The game is still Survivor. The game is to survive, right? And also, if you go into the merge with lots of fire tokens, isn't that going to put a target on your back? Isn't that an easy thing to throw? It's like, hey, man, Michelle Fitzgerald has 4 fire tokens. We're going to just let her, you know, isn't in a way having 0 fire tokens lowering your threat level? Like, I think maybe these players should be trying to get rid of the fire tokens, which sounds kind of crazy, or just keep 1 or 2. You definitely don't want to be the richest person. You don't want to be the billionaire. You don't want to have the most of this market economy, because that's going to put a massive target on your back. But then you're right, it might turn into idols, it might turn into other advantages. It does seem like these fire tokens are ruining some people's game here.
I do hope that they do become valuable, because I think that we're seeing a lot of fun stuff from them based on an anticipation of value. But if we see that anticipation falter, right, then I think that people won't care about them in the future if they bring them back into future seasons, because like, oh, well, you know, oh, it costs 5 fire tokens to buy 1 idol, then they're actually not that valuable, because it's very difficult to get 5. And so, you know, whatever. But if are like really valuable, if it's like 1-for-1, or like, that's too much. But like, if they do become like really valuable in the game, then we'll get to continue to see, if they continue to bring this concept back, people overplay, get greedy, try to get too many fire tokens, stuff like that. So I do like this concept, but I think they have to follow through on it.
I think it's pretty safe to say, especially now that production for future seasons has been postponed and we've had a chance to digest the season, it'll be a while till new Survivor's produced. Bring on the fire tokens. We're going to see a run of 7 or 8 seasons potentially here with fire tokens forward. And I'm for it. I really want to see how this plays out. And so these are the dynamics of the tribe. We get an interesting confessional from Michelle. And Survivor, where did you find this music? Did you hear that music, Taryn? Okay. It was awesome. I loved it.
So I do a podcast on American Ninja Warrior as well.
Yes.
And there is a, especially in the last season that we watched, there is something on that show that has pretty much become a rule, which is anytime they play actual music, like licensed actual music that's not just like their generic theme music, yeah, whatever, that over a certain athlete's run, that person always succeeds in the episode. And so like we used to talk about like the helicopter, like the aerial shot, like the winner's shot of like, you know, somebody talking about their family and how much the game means to them. And they're standing in a field and there's this helicopter, yeah, shot. And like, this is going to be the winner. Like, this really felt like over the top. This is the theme of the season. This is what played in the premiere, and it's playing over Michelle in a key moment for her. Like, yeah, and the praying mantis metaphor. Like, this feels like a big moment on the season. And I definitely would not be surprised if Michelle Fitzgerald is our winner.
Whoa. I would say she's making far. I have all the love in the world for Michelle. I don't know if I would call her shot just about now. That seems a little premature to me, Taryn.
I think that she's up there, especially losing Yule in this episode, who thanks, I thought was one, yeah, of the main contenders. There's now more space open for it, and she just got this really dramatic nobody else has got this music. Yeah. Like, there's
they were not going to give that music to Adam Klein, by the way. There's, yeah, no way they were going to. They're saving they're saving the circus music for Adam.
Like I said, like the helicopter shot is no longer an indicator of winners, and like they gave it to people who didn't win the game, and so sometimes they're really over the top for players that don't end up winning. But I think that, you know, when we started the season, we went a couple of episodes without really seeing much of anything from Michelle. And now I feel like she is a contender, a really top tier character on the season, where she could end up winning the whole thing. And her position isn't that bad either. I think that Wendell is definitely a much bigger target in front of her. But if she goes down to the end with him, she would win a jury vote over him.
Yep,
so I feel like the odds of Michelle winning this game have gone up considerably over the last few episodes, and this one in particular, I think, is
for
a big
sure
one.
Michelle, give her some love, man. Give her some love. She's playing great. You see her in these conversations. She's a great social player. She's engaged in every conversation, eye contact, and she has. When you look at on paper, it was 3v1. It was 3 versus 1. She should have been dead. And she not only is not dead, she wasn't even an option. She wasn't even on the table as an option to get voted out, which is incredible. It's just a credit to how good she is at Survivor. And, you know, I don't think she had to really prove anything for her win in Count Wrong, but she obviously felt like she had to. Like, there was obviously some insecurity there with a lot of the confessionals and how she's saying, I'm proving to myself that I earned the win. She's definitely up there in terms of contention. I don't think I would make her my winner pick at the moment, but I think Michelle's in it for the long haul. She's playing some great, great, great Survivor. She had another great episode, and we've said that a couple times in a row. She's doing really well, and she should be very proud of herself.
Yeah, and like I try not to get too in detail about the edit here, but I do think that the flip side of this is that they really loved this Michelle and Wendell storyline, and most of her content over the last few episodes has been about the Michelle and Wendell storyline. There's also the through line of her proving herself, but oftentimes somebody looks like a major character because they're in the middle of their most important story of the season, and then afterward it dies off a little bit. So, I'm not really even saying she's the top contender. I still feel like there are a few different top contenders, but I do think that she is a contender. Sure. I wasn't quite as sure in past, especially at the start of the season, but it's been growing. It's definitely been growing.
Yeah. That music was epic for sure. And then we're off to tribal. And before even a word is said, the smile on Jeff's face, he's loving it. He knows how good the season is. We know it too, Jeff. Well done. And then these four sit down, and what does Wendell say? He's like, Probst, what you're smirking at or something. Is. Well,
there's one thing that I really liked from Michelle in the campaigning phase of the episode, where she talked to Wendell, and when she was talking to Wendell, he was like, "Ewell's got to go. He's coming for me." And she tells him, she says, "Wendell, I will vote wherever you vote. I'm like, where, whatever you want to do, I am completely with you." Later in the scene, in the segment, she goes and talks to Nick, and she says what do we do? And he's like, should we keep Wendell? Should we keep Ewell? And she says to Nick, whatever you want to do, I'm completely, like, if you feel strongly one way, I am completely behind you. Yeah. And obviously that could have run into some problems if they both want different things, because then she's going to have to choose a side. But I think that she knew that they were both on the same page. And yeah. I think that she's playing up the fact that she is doing whatever this person wants. And I think she's playing up the fact, like, I'm not close to Wendell. If you want to take Wendell out, Nick, please just let me know and we'll do it, because she knows he's not going to do it. And to Wendell, she's saying, I'm still in love with you and we'll definitely do whatever. You know what I mean? Like, she's definitely playing up the whole everything. And I think that is the most impressive thing that I saw from Michelle in the episode.
She played it perfectly.
And both her and Nick are basically saying, like, Ewell is so smart. And here's, I think, the most important thing. Ewell will definitely win in the end. Ewell has an amazing story. Ewell has an amazing cause that he's playing for. So if you're taking a value judgment on who's a more valuable long-term ally, Ewell or Wendell, Ewell, who will definitely win in the end, Wendell, who keeps making an ass of himself, the choice becomes obvious.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show. Then we head to Tribal, and we get some more Probst and Wendell tension.
Yeah, they have a bit of a
it's
relationship.
Like they used to date. Yeah.
Yeah. My God, Jeff and Wendell just can't stay away from each other. And then Jeff launches into this narrative. Rob had a strong take on this on the Know It Alls.
Mm.
Jeff says, "It seems like the old school players, they're just not playing to the pace of the new school game. It seems like the old school players just can't keep up." Thoughts on that, Taryn?
I mean, I think that there is some truth to that. I think that it's also an overrated narrative. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, this is something I talked about with with Derek on the previous podcast, where I do think that the longer the show goes on, the more the meta game evolves. And if you are not, if you haven't played in 20 years, you haven't watched in 20 years, then you might be a little bit behind on, like, the dominant strategies in Survivor. I think that evolution is not as dramatic as it is in Big Brother, which is where I was really pulling a lot of data from. But I still think there's something to that. There's something to, like, just the basic strategies that you use, and the way that, like, how does having an idol or an advantage impact the perception that people have of you when it comes to the end game? Like, people that didn't play with advantages and idols, I think they can understand the basic strategy where play an idol, split the votes, whatever. But do they have a lot of knowledge and, like, a history of knowledge about, if you play a lot of idols, what does that do for your respect level? Mm-hmm. What does that do for you in the end? If somebody has a bunch of idols and played a bunch of idols and advantages, do you need to be worried about them in a final two? If otherwise, or final three, if otherwise they were useless in the game, but they found a lot of idols. Like, that's one of the things that, like, I think that having that sort of knowledge is useful for. Edge of Extinction. Did they watch that season? Are they up on the impact that has on the game? The fact that they know somebody is coming back, that impacts how people play in the short term, because they know somebody else is coming. It tends to make them, I think, less likely to take risks in the game, because they know that there's another external factor that they can't control that will be impacting them soon. Not to mention the fact that that person will probably be coming back with some kind of advantage. You need to be wary of that. And if they do come back, they have a very good chance of winning a jury vote, which you might not expect if you didn't, watch what happened the previous time and think about how those things play out. So I do think there are factors that come into play. I'm not sure how many of those factors had anything to do with the reason why these old schoolers lost the game. I think that most of what we saw was just run of the mill. They were outnumbered. That's, there were more new school players than old school players.
And
the old school players all had massive targets on their backs. They all had massive legacies to live up to. And especially when the swap came and there was not as much reason to keep them around as shields, we saw the result of that. And so I don't really think it was them being completely outpaced. I think it was a lot more. I'm with Rob in the sense it's a lot more that they were just massive targets. But I do think there is something to the concept of, you know, keeping up on the knowledge of Survivor. I'm just not sure how much it played into this particular season.
For sure. Jeff loves black and white narratives. He loves something simple that can just get in his head, and like David versus Goliath, you know, millennials versus Gen X. He loves just these themes in the season. And in front of his eyes, I agree with you. I think there's... It's first of all, the old school players were put in a tough spot to succeed because they were outnumbered. But to be honest, they've gotten their behinds kicked. They've gotten wrecked. You know, they've gotten taken. It's the new players have really outplayed them, and you can't really deny that either. So, you know, Rob Cesternino is completely against that theory, and he thinks it's ridiculous. And I think there's a little I'm wishy-washy about it. I think there's a little bit something there. I think the new players do play better. They do play faster. But also the old players were put in a tough situation. So I see the merit. But yeah, Jeff's going to keep that theme going in his head for a while.
And really, I think the thing that played the bigger factor is what we talked about at the start of the episode, the podcast, which is the big names versus the small names, the lions versus the hyenas. And the fact that the old school players, most of them were on the same page, but not enough of them. And if just any of them are not on board with, we all need to stick together, then that's it. Like that's all she wrote. I mean, we saw that play out exactly with Danny. If Danny had stayed on board with the old school alliance, then I think the entire game is completely flipped around.
That's the moment where it fell apart. If you go back, so right now we have Ethan, Parvati, Boston Rob, Tyson, all these old school players on Edge of Extinction. It was the Danny episode. That was the demise. That was the one piece that fell apart. If Danny, I agree with you. I can't believe you said that because we're on the same page. If Danny stayed in line, if they could have done a better job with Danny, then by the way, is Danny going to raise that flag on Edge of Extinction pretty soon?
I don't think she will. I feel like she'll stick around.
She's still there.
I'm worried about Ethan.
Do we have a visual sighting of Danny? Is she still there on that island? I'm not sure. But yeah, she is still there. Just a slight tease at her lack of airtime. But yeah, if Danny would have stayed in line, the entire game would have been different. That was the starting of the disaster for the old school players.
Yeah. And Danny wasn't even like one of the big targets, but the problem for the big targets is that there were, again, more non-big targets. And so they needed a couple of extra people. And if they had managed to hold on to Danny, then I really feel like they could have pulled something together and it had a completely different boot order. And you know, similar sort of thing with, you know, I love what Yule was doing on DeKal, and he got complete control of that tribe, but maybe there was something to the idea of, you know, going along with other big targets. Like when Tyson is pitching this idea that like, hey, you know, don't take me out, you'll be next. There was something to that argument. You know, like, I don't really know what Yule could have done in that spot at that point, because he was in such a crushing position. But the fact that he's working with the Wendells and Nicks and Sophies of the world was probably going to, unless he was able to maintain tight control of those people, it was probably going to bite him at some point. And we saw it happen here. And then there's also, you know, we can talk about even just in the last episode, should Yule have tried to flip and keep Parvati around? Because obviously he was on the outs of a tight trio in that group. And if he had sided with Parvati, first of all, would Michelle have even been on board? Because I'm not sure that's a guarantee. I don't know if Michelle sides with Parvati over Wendell. In fact, I think perhaps not, because why would you choose to work with Parvati over Wendell, who will just bulldoze his way through and then not be able to win a jury vote, versus Parvati, who's like the most dangerous player of in existence? So I'm not sure he could have, even if he wanted to, but should he have tried? I think that's a valid question to ask.
For sure, for sure. That Michelle would stick with Wendell for a long time, and there's multiple reasons why she should, I think. So, and you can see it, man, on the second rewatch specifically, when you look at Yule during this tribal council. Yule's usually pretty chill. You could see it. You could see it in his body language. His voice was a slightly different tone. I think he knew. This wasn't a blindside. I think he knew that his time was up. There's nothing that he could really do. Something interesting that happened on this tribal council. Seems like every person answered the question is, if I get voted out tonight and I come back, where are my alliances going to lie? This was really interesting. So Nick out of the gate says, hey, if you vote me out, I'll come back and work with you guys. I understand. He's just like, he just wants to expand the olive branch.
Then he really loved everyone on the chat. Like, Nick was the most upset person that they had to lose somebody.
Yeah. Credit to Nick. I know there's been episodes without airtime this season, and there's been moments of purple Nick, but like, he wasn't an option. Nick's played great. When has Nick been an option? You know, he's playing great Survivor. One time winner, one time, you know, he's never been voted out. He's going to make the merge. So credit to Nick. All their responses were different to this question of if you came back in the game, how would you treat, you know, your tribe? And Wendell was kind of, he's like, I'm done. Yeah. You vote me out. Yeah. Screw you guys.
Yeah.
Which I think is the correct thing to say. Wendell's like, nah, there's no reason to give incentive to other people voting you out. So Yule was kind of wishy-washy on that. And this was sad, man. It was sad to lose Yule. It really was. It was upsetting.
We did get one last, like, one true Yule moment. Really brought me back to Cook Islands when he's geeking out about the fire tokens. Yep. He says that they add another layer of duplicity that didn't exist before. He explains that they almost create like a market economy that can align incentives in certain ways. And I'm like, this is the Yule that I remember on Cook Islands. He gets at least one Yule moment where he gets to geek out about something like this before his time is up.
Sadly, Yule's gone. We get a nice confessional from Wendell, and show every Wendell voting confessional.
Yeah, he says,
they're good.
Yule be on the edge of extinction tonight. I thought we were cool, bro.
That was clever. He should have told Yule to put the mic down, bro. stop talking, bro. And then the votes are read, and it's pretty clear. 3-1. See you later, Yule. And sadly, his torch is snuffed.
And like, I'm sure people saw this because I thought it was a pretty jarring moment, but like, pay attention to Michelle after Yule leaves. Her entire like body language and demeanor toward Wendell completely shifts. She's like, oh, I like to see you shaking your boots a little bit. She's like touching his face. Yeah. Like she's smiling, like she's playful. This is definitely like an indicator that their relationship is not as sour as the episodes are trying to present to us.
For sure. Exactly. We learned on season 39. If you have permission to touch someone's face, there's different, you know, I shouldn't reference season 39, but you know, this is the correct way to touch someone's face in a consensual, pleasure, you know, fun little way. So yeah, it's pretty obvious that I think Michelle and Wendell are lock in step in this game. And then Nick's there as well. So Nick's in a clever little spot. You know, Nick is in a nice spot. He has those relationships from DeKal. He doesn't have many enemies. His threat level isn't super high. You know, Nick's got some things happening for him.
Yes. Yule is then going to bequeath his tokens to both Sarah and Sophie. Gives one to each.
Which, split them up.
Yeah, I thought that was the right move. I thought, spread them around as much as possible, because if somebody gets anything from you, they're going to feel good. And so, like, whether they get one or two, they're going to feel pretty good, I think. And so if you spread the love around, then you're just growing the amount of options you have if you end up coming back into the game, in terms of like, hey, I feel good about the both of you. And he can explain it to both of them, like, I didn't know which one needed it more. And so I just gave it to both, right? So
yeah, I agree. If you have seven fire tokens, give one to seven different people.
Because no, well, that might be a little much.
Yeah, give one to seven. Split it up evenly. One, you know, it's like It's like you're feeding a large family. Each child gets a slice of pizza. No one gets two. You just each get one. And then how can you be upset? It's like, oh, you should have given me more fire tokens, you know? Yeah, chop them up. Share the wealth. Santa Claus, Yule, splits up his fire tokens very appropriately. And then Yule is off to the old edge of extinction. The last old school player is gone. It is a new school, baby. I mean, you got to give it to them, man. The new school players are kicking the behinds off the old school players.
It's the next generation.
It's the new era. The young kids. I feel it, man. The young kids, new prodigies, the Zion Williamsons. They're all the prodigies are 19. I used to be at an age where I Sidney Crosby was like similar to my age, and I was like, yeah, I can relate to him. And now all the prodigies, the best poker players, the best sports athletes, they're all like way younger than me. They're good. The kids are good at this game.
Yeah. So I did ask this briefly earlier, but I feel like the one of the biggest criticisms I've seen from Yule is he should have voted to keep Parvati last week. I'm seeing a lot of people saying that, and I think there is an argument there to be made that we did talk about. But I'm also not like completely solid on it, because like I said, I don't know if Michelle is on board for that, and I don't know how Yule talks to Michelle about doing something like that when Nick and Wendell are his tightest alliance members, and Michelle is a lot closer to Wendell than him. Like, how does he go to Michelle and say, I know that we've talked about like the four of us being together, but how do you feel about taking out your ex-boyfriend with Parvati and I? Like, if she blows that up, then Yule's really screwed, right?
Yeah.
And I think she has some incentive to blow it up. And then, like, even if he doesn't have to worry about Michelle, he's still betraying Nick, one of his tightest allies. He's still taking out Wendell, another one of his allies, for Parvati, who has other loyalties in the game, probably. And does his original alliance, the structure that he's built with people like Sandra, who left him fire tokens, do these people now still trust him after siding with Parvati and blindsiding one of his allies? Like, I'm just not sure that that's the right move. I would probably just be, even if I knew I was on the outs, even if I knew if we go to tribal again, I'm in trouble. I'm not sure that's worth it in the long run if I can just hope that this would have been the merge episode in normal circumstance. Or even if it's not, hopefully I'm just one of two tribes that wins immunity, mm-hmm. and then I'm really set up moving forward from here, rather than blow up my whole spot on the off chance that I go to tribal again. I don't think it's like a black and white thing here that you should have voted with Parvati last time.
Yeah, this isn't like a self-inflicted wound like Sandra had when she gave away an idol, but there's some things he could have done. A is like, you know, life was pretty good on Dekal. You could have found an idol. That's like always option A. It's like literally there is a skill to finding idols. It's like, Yule, if you could have gotten an idol, that would have really helped. Option
Yule B. Yule and idol is another great combo.
Yeah, I think he's very good at using them with Jonathan Penner, the super idol. Anyway, Cook Islands is a lot of characters came from Cook Islands, by
great
the way.
Season.
Shout out to Cook Islands. The other point I want to make is where this episode started to slip away from Yule was after the last tribal, when Yule shared with Wendell that he had lost a little bit of trust with him. That's where things started to fall apart. That gave Wendell the green light to start the resistance. Once he knew that Yule didn't feel those butterflies in his stomach, that's where this thing kind of slipped away from him. So Yule's a legend. He's has the legacy, but would have liked to see him go a little bit farther in this game.
All right. So we do have a couple, another secret scene, one more that I found interesting, which was Ooh. That it was on the Yara tribe. We talked about Ben and how he's just like a goof out there. He's having fun. Ben finds a little boa, snake. He's like so excited. It's like, oh my God, this little guy. He picks it up. He brings it. It was on the water well. He like brings it over back into the woods, and he goes back to camp, and he's like, oh, I just found a little boa. And Sophie was like, oh my God. And he was like, yeah, I moved it. And she was like, you touched it? He was like, yeah. He was like, no. He's like, do you want to see it? And she was like, yeah. And so she has a confessional. I thought this was great. She says that her first time she played Survivor, she played with a lot of fear, so much fear. of what was going to happen, of getting voted out. And she feels like this season she's been able to let that fear go, and it's made her happier. It's made her enjoy the experience more. It's also freed her up to take more risks and get out of her comfort zone. And so she goes and she sees the snake and she touches it and she's really scared, but she says, like, this really reminds me that, like, I need to take risks in this game. And so I thought this was a great little moment for Sophie and for Ben, who is so much fun out there.
Yeah, both Sophie and Ben have it. That's fun. I miss some of these secret scenes. You're always on top of these secret scenes. Sophie is just actually so fun to watch this year, and Ben's having a lot of fun as well, for sure. That Yara tribe was a bit dysfunctional. That Yara tribe was a little bit chaotic. But my boy Adam Klein lives. He's still alive. I feel like every episode he's just scratching and clawing. Somehow he's still there. And going into the merge, I'm excited. I think we merge next episode, as seen in the next time. And it's going to be a wild ride. I cannot wait.
Adam is our Logan Nine Fingers of Survivor. Still
he's hanging on. By the way, off the top of your head, who for our merge episode next week, if you had to name three people that you think are in danger, first of all, I think Adam very well could be the merge brute. I don't think Earl gets it. I think everyone could kind of just say, hey, there's so much going on. Why don't we just get rid of Adam? I think it could land on him, and I hope not. So I think Adam's in danger at their merge boot. I really do think, let me think about this for a second. Who, you throw a name out there.
Adam, I think, is my number one most in danger at the merge. I think that, like, let's look at how things play out, right? So we have DeCall. I think DeCall is pretty tight. I think that Kim, Jeremy, Denise, and Tony, not really a lot of incentive for them to turn on each other. So I think they have a solid connection. They have ties with, Tony and Sarah. They have Cops R Us is still going strong. Sophie, I don't think, has much of a reason to go against Kim, who they had a connection. Does Sophie feel stronger with Wendell and Nick, or is she now mad at them for voting out Yul? If I had to guess, I think Sophie goes with Sarah to Tony and DeCall. And I think Ben goes with them as well, which would give them a majority if they stuck together. If they have a majority, then who are they going to want to vote out from the rest of the people left in the game? We have Wendell, Nick, Adam, Michelle, and who else? There's more people in the game than that, right?
Yeah, well, we have 11. There's 11 people going into the merge.
11, right. Oh, no, yeah. So it's 7 versus 4. So that's all. They only need 6. So it could be those 4. Those could be so looking at it that way, I think that Adam is in a lot of danger. I think Wendell is in a lot of danger.
Maybe Adam and Wendell are in the most danger, I would think, going into a merge episode.
I do think Tony's in some danger as well. I think that
Tony freaks out whenever there's chaos. What do you think he's gonna do when they merge? Tony's gonna go bananas, dude.
Oh, I forgot about Edge too. Somebody's coming back from Edge.
Right.
So wow, that completely shifts things.
So that's my top three. It would be Adam, Wendell, and whoever returns from Edge are the most in danger. That's what I would guess.
Yeah. Honestly, I am completely biased in this regard, but I'm really feeling a Tyson return. I just feel like everything is pointing to Tyson as the one that comes back from Edge. I feel like Tyson is a great competitor in challenges. He's got a belly full of peanut butter, and an extra, at least one advantage out of three, for the challenge. So I feel like Tyson has a great shot at this. I think Natalie has a good shot as well. Certainly Boston Rob with 3 tokens, who's not a slouch in competitions either, could have a good shot, but I'm really feeling Tyson as the returning person here. So if Tyson comes back in, how does he fit into things? I have no idea.
Yeah, that would be chaotic. I would love to see Tyson back as well. I think that's right. In terms of favorites to come back from Edge of Extinction, I think Rob, Tyson, and Natalie are the three favorites. It's like, oh, Danny and Ethan, I'm sorry. It's that would be tough. It's really tough for them to come back. Yeah, then we're set up for an amazing post-merge, dude. This is going to be crazy. This season is good. This is television, ladies and gentlemen. This is it, man. This is such a sick season. And like, while I think episode 7, you know, it wasn't as electric as some other episodes, you know, these are all solid 8s, 9s. These episodes are really good television, and I'm enjoying it, especially with the current state of the world. Once a week, we just get to sit down and watch Survivor as a group of people. It's like, it's my favorite thing. It's literally my favorite hour of the week is Survivor night.
Does Tyson go, Dirty Dancer says, does Tyson go to Jeremy? Is that where Tyson goes? You know, he certainly didn't find much traction in his original tribe. Jeremy, he knows him from the Poker Alliance. And Jeremy likes having meat shields around. Tyson could certainly be one of them. So
Tyson could go back to Kim. They were kind of on the outs a little bit.
Yeah, you know, Jeremy and Kim, both there. So, that I could see Tyson trying to get in there. I don't know if they need the numbers though, and that could be an issue for him. Maybe they decide, you know what, Tyson's a little more solid, a little more reliable than Tony. So why don't we pull him in there? I don't know, but I do think that, yeah, Adam, Wendell, if Tyson's the one that comes back, whoever it is that comes back, I think Tony as well could be in some trouble because they don't need him probably. If he starts getting squirrely, then who knows? But it honestly could be anything. These merges, they can really be chaotic.
I'm excited to see how it breaks down for sure. Absolutely. Are we doing legacy stock watch?
Yes, let's do it.
Let me go pee and I'll be right back. Get it set up.
Okay.
Legacy watch.
So we're gonna pull up the legacy watch. We have an update on the legacy watch. What happened over this episode, and how did that impact the legacy of the winners this week? A lot of changes, I can tell you that. A lot of changes for the legacy watch this week. Last week we saw that some highlights from last week. Yule, who is still in the legend tier as of last week. Still in the legend tier. Sandra dropped pretty significantly, but remains in the legend tier. That was from last week. Denise shot straight up into the top tier after her move last week. A massive jump forward, which was unprecedented in the legacy watch. We saw Tyson moving up last week. We saw Wendell moving down. We saw Michelle moving down a little bit last week. Other than that, mostly things are staying the same. Kim still hovering around the top tier. Jeremy was falling a little bit. Sarah was falling a little bit. But for the most part, we've got this. it's up on the screen if you're watching. If you're listening, we will be reading them out, as you know the drill by now, but we'll be reading them out so that you can know what's happening with the current legacy watch tiers. So the things I was really interested in particular with the legacy watch prior to seeing the results were Sandra. We talked about this at the top of the episode. Does Sandra's quit from Extinction actually have an impact on her legacy? People like Russell Hance certainly think it does, and we'll say it does. Will it? We'll have to see.
There we go. Let's talk some legacy.
Yes. I was also curious about Michelle. Is this episode a good one or a bad one for her? Last week, she actually fell. And this week, I want to know what happens there. And then Yule has been in the legend tier for a couple of weeks. Was tonight's episode enough to drop him out of the legend tier? We're going to have to see.
He's going out of the legend tier. He's gone. Yeah, he's not.
Well, in the top spot for the legend tier is Parvati. She stays at the top. She fell last week a bit, but she has moved back up a bit this week and stays at the top spot. Following Parvati is still Boston Rob, who moved up dramatically this week. He took a big hit on his boot episode. And then last week he stayed about the same. But I guess the content from Extinction was good content, and he had a pretty decent jump forward to stay here in the number two spot.
I agree. He's getting 3 of 4. He's batting 750, as he says. Gotta keep him up there.
Then we have Sandra. Now, I was wondering, is Sandra had a big drop last week? Is she going to drop again after the quit of Extinction? No. Sandra stays about the same as where she was from last week. So she took a big hit last week. That hit has not bounced back. She's staying where she is. She's not going back up, but she's also not continuing to fall. She remains in the legend tier, and she's remains there.
I agree. Yeah, her legacy should have taken a hit from last week, but this week her quitting, that doesn't move the needle for me. I like her staying there.
Yeah, that is basically exactly what I was saying as well. Like nobody cares. Nobody cares that she quit. Then we have Yule.
Oh, I think Yule's going to drop down here. It's his Buddha. I mean, I think as a standard rule of this game, this Legacy Watch, it's like you get voted out, you just take a drop. That's what happens. I think that has to be expected.
That is what happens, and it is what happened. Yule took a hit, and he has fallen out of the legend tier.
How far did he fall, though?
Well, we'll see, because this is too much rearranging to do. For now, you know he's out of the legend tier. The legend tier stops at Parvati, Rob, and Sandra once again, and that's where we are. But there are still more changes. That at the top tier, we're now at the top tier. Top of the top tier. Last week, it was Denise. After a massive jump forward from where she was before. Prior to Denise, it was Tony. Tony was pretty consistently at the top of the top tier. However, we're seeing another shift. And this time, it's a big jump forward for Kim Spradlin, who is going to leapfrog over a few people and head to the top of the top tier. In fact, she is flirting with the line. Getting back into the legend tier. She is just a couple of hundredths of points away from hitting that top tier average or the legend tier average.
I would put her in the legend tier. She has the best one time game in history in One World, and she's done awesome this season after a rough start. She's in a great spot. She has idols. She has options. And I agree. I think she should be in legend tier.
I agree. And I said this last week. I feel like I've seen enough from her. I saw enough from her last week when she didn't play her idol correctly. I was like, you know what, Kim, back in the legend tier. Absolutely. I was never solid on her being out of the legend tier in the first place. But I definitely thought she deserved it after seeing this episode, the great spot she's in. I think definitely combine that with her previous win. I think she is for sure in the legend tier, and she is getting there. I leave this up for the rest of the week, so there's definitely a chance that over the rest of the week she moves up just a couple of hundredths of a point and she ends up in the legend tier for the week, but for now she is at the top of the top tier. Following Kim, we have Tony
who,
is going to jump over Denise. Briefly surpassed Tony, but after her big move last week, she had a somewhat quieter week, and Tony is going to retake his position over Denise, get back to about where he's been all season long. Tony has not seen much movement in general. He is just a bit away from the legend tier, never gets too close, but he's consistently near the top of the top tier, and so it's going to be him right under Kim there in the top tier.
Yeah, I agree. Tony's steady Eddie here. Besides a little freak out last week with the Spy Shack, if he can have a good post merge game here, he deserves to be in that legend tier. And I agree with everything that's happened so far. The fans are on the same page as I am.
There you go. After Tony, we finally have Yule, who has landed third in the top tier. Now I think that if we go back all the way back to the original list, Yule was at the top of the top tier before the season started, and then after that was consistently hovering around either the top of the top tier or the bottom of the legend tier. So he has taken a hit in this episode. Definitely curious to see if he bounces back and goes back over Tony for that spot if once it's not, you know, recent and fresh in people's minds that he was just voted out.
I think he will have a little bit of a bounce back, but that seems good to me. I mean, I think he gets voted out. Plus, I think it was he didn't play that great. Like, it wasn't just because of circumstance. I see the drop for Yule as deserved.
Mm-hmm. So then we actually have a tie.
Ooh.
Yes. A tie that we saw Denise, who jumped up a significant margin last week, the highest margin we've ever seen. She's going to lose some of those gains this yep. week. There's going to be some rubber banding. She's going to lose a pretty big chunk, but about a fourth of what she gained, she has now lost. Ooh. But she is still solidly in the top tier and tied with Jeremy, who moved up from this episode. And so they have met at the exact same point.
I would put Jeremy ahead of Denise, and I would put Jeremy ahead of Yule and maybe even Tony. You know how I love Jeremy. I think he could be up a few notches here. I think this is slightly underrating Jeremy, but that's why he's such a great player, is he gets underrated every time he plays. You know, that's why he's so good, is because he's not considered a legend when he is.
Yeah, this is about where Jeremy has been hovering all season long. He's had a couple of, like, he's gone up a little bit, he's gone down a little bit, but pretty consistently has been in this spot. He started the season in exactly where he is right now. Before the season started, he had the exact same average.
That's not right, man. He started the season in this spot. He should be higher. He's playing great. He has relationships. He has safety without power. He has Natalie farming advantages for him on Edge of Extinction. He should be higher. I don't agree with this one.
I think he's one of these players who definitely has potential to continue to rise as we go. But that's where he stands right now.
Yep.
After Jeremy and Denise as a tie there, we have Tyson very close behind, who has fallen a bit, but he actually rose from last week after this week's episode. He's amazing. That's what it is.
You got another fire token. His belly is full of peanut butter. By the way, that jar of peanut butter was a huge jar of peanut butter. That was massive.
He said that he saw how big it was, and that's one of the reasons why he decided to take it.
Oh, that's amazing. Because I would have thought it would have been like a nice little thing, but it was huge.
Yeah. So after Tyson is Sophie still. She remained exactly the same as where she was last week. No movement there on Sophie, but still solidly in the top tier.
Bump her up a little. She had a great challenge. She's in an amazing spot. She has idols, relationships. It's like underrated once again. Sophie Clark, consistently underrated.
Yes, and hold on. I don't think I saw this before, but I think that perhaps there is another tie. Is that correct? No, it's not correct. Okay, that's good.
No tie.
I just wrote it down wrong. Sophie actually did not stay the same. She actually moved up. That's the problem. She moved up a bit. She's still in the same spot, but she actually did see some movement forward. Sarah has stayed around the same and will hold on to the top tier spot. But she's still hovering around that the very bottom of the top tier threshold.
Sarah Lucina, big fan. Not always a big fan, but she's flipping me this season.
It really has been impressive what we've seen from her, and I think really helps explain her success in Game Changers. Although I do think we saw a little bit of like angry Sarah in this episode.
She got very angry at Adam.
Which I don't know how great a look that was,
but it's okay. In a way, that anger bonds her to Ben and Sophie, because if they can see this physical display of emotion against the other person, is then they feel more comfortable. It's like, if you can unify your dislike for the other group of people, it feels a little icky sometimes, but often can be a good strategy for these social games.
Yeah. So then we head to the middle tier, and in the middle tier, we still have Natalie at the top.
Okay.
A small Natalie's move been forward. A little
quiet.
Yeah, a small move forward from Natalie, actually. We didn't see anything from her this episode, but I think in anticipation for the return challenge that people are starting to remember that she exists. This is probably what's happening. So there she is at the top of the middle tier. After Natalie is Michelle.
Michelle bumping up.
Continuing to move up. So she has been moving up significantly over the course of the season. She had a bit of a bump in the road in the previous episode where I theorized that just the tension between her and Wendell wasn't a great look for either of them. And so they both dropped Wendell more than her. But in this episode, she saw a huge jump forward. She completely overtook the losses that she experienced in the previous episode and then got another bit on top of that. And so she is now in the second position on the middle tier, still moving up for Bumper Michelle.
Up. Bumper up.
There you go.
This stays. I mean, and this is going to change a lot as we learn who wins the season. And as I said before, my top three best Survivor players of all time is Sandra, Parvati, and whoever wins this season is going to be number three in terms of the greatest of all time. So they're this is the season to win, man. To win the all winners is going to cement your legacy forever.
There you go. After Michelle is Ethan. Okay. He actually did move up from this episode. Again, you get a reminder that he's there and that he's awesome. So he is there. After Ethan, still Wendell.
Wendell.
Yes, I expected a much more significant drop for Wendell from this episode, but actually he didn't have much of a drop at all. He had a much more significant drop in the previous episode. I think that a lot of people have already priced in jerk face Wendell, and no more jerk faces are going to impact their view of Wendell at this point. And the fact that he survives and that he is continuing in the game is enough to keep his position here in the middle tier.
A rare situation where the villain stays the same. I like this. Just because he's the villain doesn't mean his legacy should drop, you know? And then going into the post-merge, we'll see how he navigates it next week.
Yes. After Wendell is Nick still.
Okay.
Nick,
not a lot of movement here.
Nick has been flirting with the bottom tier. He's dropped in there a couple times, but he is now solidly in the middle tier, or at least somewhat solidly in the middle tier. He did have a bit of a rise from where he was previous to this episode. So he's building a bit of a buffer between himself and the bottom tier. I, for the record, do not think Nick belongs in the bottom tier. But
I'm with
but
you. He's the middle tier for me.
Yeah, the audience feels a different way. So,
I have a feeling. I have a feeling Adam Klein is going to slip to bottom tier here. Oh no,
keep him in the Klein.
Middle tier.
Adam Klein took a very big hit in this episode.
Not surprising.
And he has, in fact, fallen from the middle tier to the bottom tier.
Well, hopefully, he can rise from the ashes here in the post merge.
Yeah. I said this last week. I'm going to keep saying this. I feel like by the end of the season, Adam regains what he's lost. I think that like his winning season, he looked like a fool sometimes. Like that's just how Adam plays the game.
Messy.
But I think he'll come out on top. I feel like Adam will regain what he's lost at the very least.
Yeah, he's in the bottom tier. It's probably deserved after he you know, the only thing that's probably kept him in the game these last 2 weeks is his tribe winning immunity. It's if they lose this week or the previous week, he's in trouble. But we'll see how he can manage post merge. As we said before, I don't think he has a lot of options, and feels like his time is up pretty soon. I hope good things. I'll keep hope alive.
Yeah. This is a rough one. I disagree. It feels wrong to see Adam there. After Adam is still Ben. Ben appears to have hit a ceiling. He started at the very, very bottom. He had been very slowly gaining some points here and there week to week. But over the last couple of weeks, he has actually been staying about the same. He gains points here. He loses a couple points here. And he's very solidly in the bottom tier.
I thought Ben would slowly be increasing. He's doing very well at the challenges, and he seems to be in the majority most of the time. So I understand if he stays in the bottom tier, but I thought there would be slight. I've been slowly more and more impressed with Ben as the season goes along, but I guess the fandom doesn't agree with me.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what we were seeing at the start, but for whatever reason, and which is weird to me because I feel like the last couple episodes have been some of his best episodes, like showing that he is getting in with Sophie and Sarah, that he, you know, overcame Boston Rob. I feel like he's got a lot of room left to go in the season, but I think that the gains that he's made with the content he's been getting on the season seems to have dried up. It seems as though from the audience's perspective, unless he gives them something different from this, that they're like, that's all we're giving you.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. And then the last two we have looks like Amber
and Danny.
They're essentially non-existent.
No real movement here.
No movement.
We saw Amber drop the week that Boston Rob was voted out. I speculated that's just her connection to him, like his loss rubbed off on her. And she's actually regained the points that she lost that week over the last couple of weeks. And so she was moving up, but she's now back to about where she was when Boston Rob was voted out. So she's fine. And then Amber solidly there at the bottom, very bottom of the bottom.
I would say if there's a betting market for who's going to tap out after this next challenge at Edge of Extinction, I think Danny and Amber could just both call it quits very soon here.
I don't think Amber does because she's got Rob.
Right? Yeah, I can see her piecing out. I guess you're right. If Rob gets back in, Amber needs to stay there and farm gifts for him. But I think Danny might just, I've had enough. Danny could say pretty quickly here and I wouldn't be surprised.
I feel like Danny's like, I feel like she's a really competitive person. I don't know if she quits.
Sure.
I feel my money would be on Ethan. Not because he wants to give up, but just we've seen a couple of times now on Extinction where I've been like, oh, is he going to? And like he very explicitly talked about it in this episode. So I think if anyone is going to, it's going to be Ethan for health concerns. And that it's going to be very sad.
Yeah, so Danny's at the bottom of this list. Remember, Danny, she got $1 million from Survivor. It's good to be at the bottom of the winner's list. It's a fine place to be.
Yeah. So that's what we have for the Legacy Watch.
I love the Legacy Watch.
I am too. It's been so interesting. Now, Christina, who does a lot of analysis for our Big Brother ratings and stuff, I've been feeding her the data. And so she's been playing around with it to look at like what kind of things can we read from this? How does the edit impact how the Legacy Watch works, and stuff like that. So be on the lookout for some potentially fun statistic-y things.
I like analytics. I like numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I love when numbers get applied to reality television for sure.
So should be fun. All right. That's about what we have for you. Lots to get into in this episode. We've covered it all.
Every episode we could just talk for hours because there's so much going on. We're down to 11. Everyone drop your buffs. We have merged. And what is going to happen? There will be blindsides. There will be tragic. There will be tears. There will be some returning members from Edge of Extinction. And some things are going to happen, and hopefully the pace and the excitement of the season keeps trucking along because I am loving this season.
Yeah, me too. We'll see. We'll keep updating you on the season as we progress. We'll of course be back next week to talk everything Survivor, dig into the details of the episode. So thank you guys so much for joining us. There's like I said, Big Brother Canada has been canceled, but we do still have some post-season Big Brother Canada coverage for you. We're going to try and get interviews with all of the players whose dreams were just shattered. So look out for that. We're also going to do a Brant Steele simulation of how might the season have played out from this point if it had continued. This is kind of an unprecedented time in Big Brother or Survivor. That could you imagine a season of Survivor literally canceled in the middle of it and doesn't come back and they aired half of it? Like, that would be crazy because that's what's happening with Big Brother Canada right now, and it's crazy. Keep on the lookout for all of that stuff. And then, you know, come find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. Find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren. I don't have a Big Brother to cover, so I gotta create some other content. So if you want to help me out, then you can come hang out with me on Twitch or wherever you want to find me.
Taren and I are trying to figure out the logistics of doing some BBCan season 5 coverage.
Yes.
If we can get that would be pretty cool. So we're working hard on that, and hopefully everyone is staying at home. Boring is good right now. Everyone stay home. Let's not spread our germs, because this little virus is a little bit deadly. So let's just chill at home and let this thing pass and enjoy our Survivor in the meantime.
Yes. Spoilers for Big Brother Canada 5, but Kevin is the winner of that season.
Is that what happened?
And he has never watched it.
Never watched it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we are looking into how can we stream a sort of like reaction commentary watch, whatever, of watching Kevin watch Kevin win Big Brother Canada.
It'll
5.
Be a trip. That would be crazy, man. Yeah. It's been 3 years since season 5 Big Brother Canada happened. I never watched the episodes. It would be fun to go over someone like you, because you had the outside perspective, I had the first person's perspective. It would be an amazing rewatch for sure. And season 5 was kind of epic. It was pretty good.
Yes. So stay tuned for that. Kevin, where can people find you?
Where can people find me? On Twitter, Kevin Rob Martin. On Instagram, Kevin Rob Martin. And again, check out the website I just made, feedwhoneed.ca. We're trying to get groceries for free to high-risk individuals during this COVID crisis. So yeah, we're busy, man. I'm thriving in quarantine. There's some tough stuff happening right now, but I've also been kind of like, it's been a nice reset. This has been good for a lot of people as well in terms of just resetting. I'm doing well, dude. Life is good. I'm in a really good place, and I enjoy talking to you once in a while about Survivor. This has become a thing that I really look forward to.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on, and thank you to the audience for joining us as well. That's all we have for you, so thanks again, and see you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Taren's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taren and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price, and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.